orientation, gender identity, or expression, national origin, age, disability, veteran status, or any other characteristic protected by law. And whereas more than 500 employees and a community governing board of local leaders and medical professionals continue to assure Twin Cities is the hospital choice of local residents, and whereas Twin Cities Community Hospital has served generations of Atascadero residents and area visitors, now therefore we, the City Council, members of the City of Atascadero, do hereby recognize that Twin Cities Community Hospital is celebrating its 40th anniversary and is honored for all it has achieved. So thank you. It's a round of applause for our own hospital. And more personally, I can say I, as many of our community, literally owe our lives to the hospital and excellent service that's been provided over the years. And we do offer this opportunity for you to say a few words, and then maybe we'll take a quick picture with you.
Okay, well, thank you, Your Honor, and thank you, everybody, for the proclamation tonight. Yeah, we're honored, and I'm very honored to have the City of Atascadero as one of our twins in Twin Cities, and I have to admit, when I ran the sister hospital in Manteca, I didn't know anything about Twin Cities. And when my predecessor told me that he worked in Templeton, I didn't even know where Templeton was. But I'm happy to be here. I'm going on my fifth year, and I'm very proud of the hospital. We've grown a long way, and we're honored to serve everybody in the North County, and we hope for the next 40 years as well. And so we're going to continue to grow, continue to serve. And I have some commemorative lapel pins, if I might, for the council members tonight, and we're celebrating our 40th year through a series of events this year, and we'll be celebrating Hospital Week and have a birthday cake later on in March.
So, I think if you join us in the middle, we'll walk by you and receive our commemorative pins and give you a proclamation, however you want to do that. Well, next we are going to recognize a longtime member of our community for a long time of service. And Mr. David Bentz, if you'd like to step up to the lectern there and just listen a little bit, reminisce a little bit, and I think the council has a few words to share, but we too have something for you. A little background, David Bentz is a retired consultant and manages his own business, Revenue Allocation Management, consulting for governmental agencies. As a planning commissioner, David's professional background and experience working in local government has served the City of Atascadero very well. He was employed by various cities in Southern California for over 38 years, serving various communities as city treasurer, finance director, chief financial officer, and city manager. David viewed his role as a planning commissioner as one of an attentive listener, being well informed of the city's planning and zoning code requirements and working to build understanding and consensus between the planning commission and the public. When serving as commission chairperson, he is known for his efficiency in the running the meeting process and in shortening meetings by reducing repetitive discussion and moving the group forward to a motion. You don't know how hard of a job that is, but David, David served the city as a planning commissioner from 1999 to 2004, and then again beginning in 2008 through 2016. David has an extensive record of community service, as demonstrated by his involvement in numerous local community groups, including Atascadero's Rotary Club, the Boy Scouts of America, fitting they are here this evening, and serving as a board member for Atascadero's Church of the Nazarene, as well as president and board member for Creative Alternative for Learning and Living, an organization that assists and works to enable their physically and mentally challenged adult clients to live in homes rather than being housed in institutions. We appreciate David's lifetime of commitment to public service. David, thank you for your many years of service as planning commissioner and to the citizens of Atascadero. Little round of applause for Mr. Bentz. Well, we're not done yet. I do want to give each council member an opportunity to just share a word or two. Now, Mr. Bentz at times has pointed out to us that he has an alternate view of some of our thoughts now and then, and we appreciate that. And honestly, we look back and I think we are a unique council in that every council member up here has served on the Planning Commission, and which I think is invaluable experience to be where we are. And every one of us has been mentored over the years by David Bentz. He was a great example. I think I would say the best planning commissioner we've ever had in our community, and he does give a lot of thought to that process. And so I want to personally thank you for the mentoring you've done with many planning commissioners over the years and for your thoughtful advice over the years as well. And I just will ask any other council member if they'd like to share a thought, please do.
Thank you. I served on the planning commission with David and actually took a trip down to San Diego and learned quite a bit about smart growth and other topics. David is one of the most straightforward people I know. If it's on his mind, if he thinks it's important, he will let you know, and I appreciate that very much. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, I serve as a planning commissioner with David, and I actually looked to you and Sandy when I first got on as an example of, you know, what to do, how to do, and those type of things. So I really do appreciate your leadership. I do appreciate the focus and the concise way that you do lead meetings. That is that does help keep things on track, and that's something that I've come to learn is valuable, and I really do appreciate your skill and just your service. You've served this community for a long time, and I thank you very much for that.
Ditto, ditto, ditto. I looked to you as a mentor, and I really enjoyed our times after the meetings at the Carlton when they used to be open for beverages. And I can remember a couple of times where we ended up showing up at the same time at one of the locations that we were checking out before the meeting, just happened to both be there at the same time. And I always appreciated you're very pragmatic, you think things through, and you were always, you know, always willing to, it's intimidating for someone from the public to come up and speak, especially if they have something before the Planning Commission, especially if it's just, you know, a resident who's not a developer or something. And you always try to make people feel comfortable and that they were understood and kind of bridge that gap between city and the public. So I thank you for that. And thank you for all that you've done for our community.
And I served the last 2 years on the Planning Commission with David, and the mayor's proclamation really nailed it in that you helped bring many items to conclusion and prevented them from dragging on. And so I think we all can appreciate that, having sat through a lot of long meetings. But I also appreciate our conversations after the meetings about finances and those sort of things as well because of your expertise and background in that. So thank you, David.
If you'd like to share some parting wisdom, and then we will join you in front with a token of our appreciation.
I would like to say that I tried my best to serve on the Planning Commission honorably. And I appreciate each and every one of you. I remember many, many things. We don't need to go into those many, many things tonight, but I'm happy to have been of service to this community. I love it. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I think that's it, isn't it? Oh, we have one more. We do kind of hate to do this one, actually, because we really do not want to see our city clerk.
If we don't do it, she has to stay.
I think it's possible we may be able to keep her longer. We are honored but very saddened in many ways to see the retirement of our city clerk, Marcia McClure Torgerson, who's really been with the city for a, well, not that long, you're not that old, but many years. And I'm just going to try to get through this commendation and we'll see if we can still say a few words. Commendation presented to Marcia McClure Torgerson. And as soon as I complete this, Miss Arnold, did you have, I'm going to invite our county supervisor to the lectern next and maybe you can add a few more. Whereas Atascadero City Clerk Marcia McClure Torgerson has served the city and the citizens of Atascadero as city clerk for more than 20 years with extraordinary class and distinction. And whereas Marcia McClure Torgerson has led by example, demonstrating the highest caliber of integrity, enthusiasm, and a commitment to public service and the city clerk profession. And whereas Marcia McClure Torgerson has long served as a highly respected leader in the city clerk community, and whereas Marcia McClure Torgerson has demonstrated herself to be a thoughtful and highly capable leader who has set a wonderful example for all city clerks, I would say for all government employees, whereas Marcia McClure Torgerson is widely known as an ethical and honorable member of her profession, setting the highest standards for herself, staff, council members, and commissioners. And whereas Marcia McClure Torgerson developed the city's public trust project in 2007, which included workshops and training for community members together with the city's public officials and staff, and whereas Marcia McClure Torgerson coordinated the creation of the city's local hazard mitigation plan and also served as the project coordinator for the City Hall Annex building after the 2003 San Simeon earthquake devastated our historic City Hall building. And whereas Marcia McClure Torgerson has consistently proven herself to be an excellent and strategic source of information and expert advice, and whereas the depth and breadth of knowledge combined with the vast experience possessed by Marcia McClure Torgerson will be sorely missed, and whereas the members of the City Council, past and present, recognize Marsha McClure Torgerson as a dedicated public servant and are sincerely grateful to have had the opportunity to work closely with her throughout these years, now therefore be it known that we, the City Council of the City of Atascadero, do hereby officially commend City Clerk Marsha McClure Torgerson for her many years of dedication, commitment, and outstanding service to the City of Atascadero and its citizens. Supervisor Arnold.
Yes, thank you. And so, Marsha, I just wanted to come tonight to add to the thanks and congratulations, and on behalf of the county, just let you know how much you've meant to the entire community. And I just can't imagine these meetings or most of anything that goes on in Atascadero without your help and guidance and participation. But I know that we'll get to see you, and I just hope you know how much you've meant, how much your dedication has meant to, I know I speak for so many people in this community, so thank you. It's just been a pleasure to know you and work with you, and but I know retirement's going to be a lot of fun. So,
Well, Debbie, if you would stay there, all the council would like to join you in front, because one, we have a couple things we're going to present to you. Then we'll all say a few words, and the council will join in listening to you. Let's move on up here. Well, one, I'm going to give you your 20-year pin. I think it's a real diamond.
I think it is.
We need to get color between you two. That's right.
Yeah. So, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And Debbie, why don't you help her hold that, and we'll hold this one here. Very good.
Thank you very much.
And while you have your hands full there, everyone needs a giant one of these for their desk. So there you go.
And it's heavy. Ooh, is there
it is heavy.
Oh, it's really heavy.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Let me sit.
Well, let's head back to our seats. Marsh, if you'd head to the lectern, we would like to say a few words, and then we'll let you say a word or two. Just ask each council member to share a word or two. Also, I will, after we have the council members say a word or two, I'm going to ask our city manager if she'd like to lead any staff and any comments. I'm sure there would be some. Now you can get away with saying all those things you were afraid to say before, department heads. So take it away, anyone that would like to share a comment.
I'd love to share. Well, Marsha, the words that come to mind when I think of you are integrity and class. And, you know, whenever we had contentious campaigns, any of those type of issues going on, you had such a level head, common sense, and just a clear vision for the facts and what needs to be done. And you don't know how much I really appreciate that in all the different aspects that we've dealt with here in the City Council, but most of all, you are a very classy lady, and you are a woman of integrity, and I really appreciate you for that.
Thank you.
Marsha, you have been through so much. I look back over the years through good times and bad, and you've seen it all. And you have performed with grace towards those in the public and those that are on the council and those that you work with in every situation. I don't know how we can fill those shoes. We're going to miss you.
Yeah, what they said. And and I'll just say, personally, I remember our drive back from the League of California Cities where it was just the two of us, and I really appreciated that time with you. I consider you a friend and a colleague, and I'm just honored to know you and have worked with you. Thank you.
And Marcia, I know I've worked with you less than any of the other members of the council, but I'm struck, having dealt with you through election issues, your fairness and your objectivity, and how you treat everybody the same with decency and integrity. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I think we've become friends over many years, and I think the wise behind-the-scenes counsel, when things are going tough, I think is when we all can appreciate your even temperament the most. And you've been a wise counsel to many councils and to many city managers. So I'm going to turn it over to our city manager to take it away for a moment or two.
Thank you, Marcia. I think everybody talks about, your ethics, your professionalism, your dedication to the city of Atascadero, to the community, your level-headedness. But I think those of us that have been on the executive team, and especially myself, have appreciated your friendship, your warmth, your ability to work with all of us, keep us lightheaded. I'm not sure about the class all the time, Brian. I'll tell you some stories a little later. No, she is a very classy lady. Yeah. Who, me? Marcia and I, we were reminiscing at lunch today, have known each other for 20 years today, and have had a lot of lunches and a lot of good discussions and good times, and I'll miss not seeing you quite as much. So thank you for your service to Atascadero, and thank you for being a friend. Do any of the other department heads want to say anything?
Marcia, it's been an honor to serve the community with you over these years, and I certainly appreciate your friendship. You have been someone that we can all look up to and honor your way of being, your service, your class, your integrity. We really appreciate you. Thank you for all you've done.
Marcia, I hope we can keep you close at hand as the advisor to all of us here that are new in the city. And you've been an excellent help to me getting started in the last year and a half. Just getting up to speed, you've got so much history. There's so much value. I don't know how I'll ever replace that, but hopefully we can keep you around close at hand to consult and advise us. Thanks for all your help so far.
Marcia, I'm not quite prepared. I thought this was a roast, actually. Sorry. Now, you've been great, Marcia. You're kind of the face when I started here. I associated Atascadero with you, and because we coordinated so much. But you've been great help, very classy, very intelligent, and I look forward to working with you on the Santa Lucia Bridge and that sediment basin up the street from your house. But anyways, thank you for all your service here.
Well, Marcia, I've only got about 45 minutes of comments here, so hopefully everyone will be patient. Seriously,
so
though. I've worked with you for the last 10 years, and it's all been a great experience, well, most of it. Your knowledge of the elections code is unsurpassed. We've been through, besides the elections, several initiative measures over the years, and we've worked closely on those. With the government code, we've had to deal with Brown Act issues, public records requests, and I think that a lot of times the public doesn't have a complete understanding of all the issues that a city clerk has to deal with, and you deal with them all and have dealt with them all very well, and I very much appreciate working with you, and best of luck to you and Tom in your retirement.
Thank you.
So I just really want to thank you for the last year of being a fabulous mentor and teacher, and thank you for sending me your personal email address today, and please, please, please don't change your phone number because I'll be calling you, and Phil too, so we'll be calling you. Thank you, Marcia, for everything.
Well, thank you, staff, and I truly can say the only reason we're letting you go is you did a very good job of bringing on a new person that's also very competent, and we're honored to have Laura join in it. You can see it's some big shoes to fill, as they say, but we're really appreciative of her confidence in you. So, yeah, just give her a call now and then. Marcia, it is a roast. You heard the city engineer, so you want to start with him? Anything you'd like to say?
It's tempting. Actually, I was going to say, after a couple of comments about, you know, what are we going to do without you, you know, not to ask me questions or whatever, but like I've said to people who have said that to me, I'm only retiring, I'm not dying. So I am still around, and I'll be glad to answer a phone call. Excuse me. But what I, seriously, all kidding aside, all I wanted to say was 20 years, I never thought I would be at the city clerk for 20 years. When I first started, I was filling a vacancy from the previous city clerk leaving midterm. The council at the time appointed me to take that spot. and I thought I was just going to fill in those 2 years and then, you know, move on, have someone else who knew city clerk run for the position and take it. But I ended up finding out how interesting it was and how challenging it was, and I was hooked pretty quick, and 20 years later, here I am. I do want to thank that council from 20 years ago. Ray Johnson was one of those council members that appointed me, so I thank him. Thank you. And so I want to thank that council for appointing me, having faith in me. I want to thank the city, though, in training, sending me to all the training I needed to do, because I knew nothing about being a city clerk when I was appointed, and the city has always been very supportive of the importance of the training so I could be certified, and to keep up every year with all of those trainings and conferences that I go to. It's been very helpful to network with all the other city clerks in the state, and really helped me to be able to do as good a job as I could by having all that information. And I am really going to miss working. I actually love working here, but I do feel it's time for me to move on and do something different. I'm going to miss the people working here. It's like a family. Working here didn't help. Working here has been like being with a big family. I've always said that you do feel like you're with your family working here with the council and with the employees. And I am going to miss those relationships and everything. But I know, like I say, it is time for me to move on, and Laura's going to be doing a great job. And so I do just want to thank everybody for all the kind words. I'm overwhelmed by all of that, and I appreciate the kind words, though. And again, thank you for everything tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we're saying now back to work. We'll continue on with our meeting now. We go to the consent calendar, which are items believed to be fairly non-controversial and can be approved without much discussion, unless any council member would like to pull it for more discussion, or any member of the public, if you have any questions on any item. So is there any member of the council or the public wishing to pull a consent calendar item? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion on the consent calendar.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. A roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
I abstain on number one, yes on 2 through 4.
Councilmember Borbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council members. The first thing I want to do tonight is give you an update on the house on Ensenada. If you remember, this is the house that experienced significant erosion during the last storms, and the house has been threatened to fall in the creek. And so out of concern for health and safety of the occupants, the property was red tagged. The homeowners and all of their belongings were safely evacuated. And last week we had a new development. Two generous and civic-minded Atascadero business owners stepped forward and offered to remedy the creek bank erosion in order to allow the owners to move back into their home, offering their services free of charge to the homeowners. Michael Frederick's Paving Corporation volunteered to provide all the labor, equipment, and material to reconstruct the creek embankment with imported boulders and backfill. And Midcoast Geotechnical volunteered to observe the construction and test the materials to ensure the property would be completely safe to return to. That is a very generous donation from each of those businesses. The city worked closely with Leonard Sutherland of Michael Frederick's Paving and Dane Jensen of Midcoast Geotechnical to ensure that any and all necessary permits were quickly expedited, which included helping to ensure that emergency permits were cleared through the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Army Corps of Engineers. The value of the services, which have been offered free of charge by these very generous businessmen, include all the materials, construction, and professional services, and is estimated worth more than $50,000 in services and supplies. In addition to Frederick's Paving and Midcoast Geotechnical, we want to be sure that all of our terrific community volunteers who responded to help out the homeowners in the situation are also recognized. The American Red Cross, the Atascadero Mutual Water Company, Peabody and Plum, city staff, and numerous city volunteers, and Clay Septic. This is why I love living in Atascadero. Atascadero is a terrific community of wonderful people who stand up and step in when they see someone in need, and we're very grateful to everyone who's volunteered to help out. They're working through a few of the details with the homeowner and Michael Frederick's construction, but we do hope to see work soon on the creek. So thank you to all that have helped out this couple that have lived there and had their home endangered and had to move out. And thank you to Atascadero. It's always amazing how we get things done. So after 25 years of being a beloved feature near the front of the Charles Paddock Zoo, last November our well-known bronze tiger statue left its post at the zoo so that it could get a facelift and a makeover. It is done. So with a sunny forecast ahead, the tiger will now make its return to the zoo on Thursday, March 2nd around 10 a.m. So if you want to see a flying tiger, go out to the lake park and the tiger will be craned back in on Thursday. It'll be exciting and fun to watch. But the party will be on Saturday, March 11th, from 10 a.m. till 12 noon. So we'll be holding a welcome back party for the tiger at the zoo. All of the public is invited and welcome to attend the grand welcoming back of the tiger at that time. Donations to benefit the tiger makeover can be dropped off or mailed to Friends of the Charles Paddock Zoo and mark Tiger Makeover to get your tax deduction. I think they are just short, but the foundry has agreed to go ahead and return the tiger and has said that, yes, we'll take it on payment plans for the rest. So if anybody can help out with that, or if you go to the zoo on either Saturday or Thursday and enjoy the tiger, please make a donation to that fund. We have Slider Day on Traffic Way coming up. This is another fun Traffic Way event. It's similar to last year's Tater Day, only they changed it to sliders. It's brought to you by the Traffic Way Business Collaborators. There will be delicious samples of food from a variety of Atascadero restaurants and food trucks, all for only $10 per person if you buy early bird tickets, which are on sale now at the Carlton. The price will go up to $15 per person on the day of the event, plus you risk the possibility of being sold out, which has happened. There will also be entertainment, music, and a variety of other vendors to enjoy. So please come out to Traffic Wing in downtown Atascadero on March 11th from 1 to 4. And for more information, you can go to www.visitatascadero.com. These, again, are always fun events. They do sell out. Lots of music, lots of good food, a nice afternoon, so please stop by. We also have a new event coming to Atascadero. It is the Z-Day California Car Show. This will take place on Saturday, March 18th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., and over 150 of the most beautiful and unique Z cars will surround the Sunken Gardens. The car show was previously held in Pismo Beach, and we're thrilled to now host them here in downtown Atascadero. This premium Datsun Nissan Z car show is provided by Fast Intentions and will include Z cars from all generations from across the state. There will also be music, entertainment, racing simulators, a mobile dyno machine, trophies, models, raffles, food truck vendors, a beer island, and a special guest appearance by Formula Drift champion Chris Forsberg. This new event to Atascadero is being co-sponsored by the Atascadero Business Tourism Business Improvement District and the City of Atascadero, so don't miss out on the event. For more information, again, go to visitatascadero.com. And to register your car, visit socalz.net. Again, that's March 18th from 10 to 3 p.m. And last but definitely not least, after Fire Chief Kurt Stone retired last June of 2016, his position of Atascadero's Fire Chief was left vacant. We appointed retired Five Cities Chief Mike Hubert as the interim Fire Chief last year while a recruitment to fill the position was ongoing. Chief Hubert's appointment ended in December of 2016, and we conducted two nationwide recruitments for the fire chief position, one last fall and another in January and February of this year. Both of these recruitment processes included a thorough review of numerous applications, an extensive interview panel process, as well as an in-depth background and reference checks. After all that, I am very pleased to announce that I have selected Fire Captain Casey Bryson to fill the fire chief position. Per our personnel rules, all city manager appointments to department director positions are subject to council confirmation, so I will be bringing that before you for your confirmation on the March 14th agenda. Chief Bryson began his career in fire service with the City of Atascadero as a fire cadet through the Atascadero High School Work Experience Program in the early 1990s. In 1994, he became a seasonal reserve firefighter and was promoted to a full-time firefighter EMT in 1999. Thereafter, he was quickly promoted to fire engineer and then to fire captain in 2004. Casey has served the city and the citizens of Atascadero on a full-time basis for over 17 years now. He has served as president of the Atascadero Firefighters Association, president of the San Luis Obispo Training Officers Association, and as the area director for the San Luis Obispo Tri-County Area of Southern California Training Officers Association. He completed paramedic school and holds several incident command positions in the finance section and has been a member of the U.S. Forestry Incident Management Team. Casey is a founding member of the North County Technical Rescue Team and has served as the Atascadero Fire Department team leader. He also served as a disaster response trail supervisor. He has led the department grant writing team and is the team leader for the Insurance Service Organization Fire Suppression Rating Classification. Casey has completed 6 years as department training officer and has been emergency operations manager, responsible for disaster planning for the city, including leading us at EMI in October of this year. He is a graduate of Atascadero High School in Cal Poly, and he lives in Atascadero with his wife, Heidi, and their three children. Through the years, Chief Bryson has proven himself to be a true team leader and has exhibited the necessary qualities which I feel strongly qualify him to fulfill the role of fire chief. So on behalf of the entire city, we extend our congratulations as well as our support, and we look forward to working with Casey.
And with congratulations, Chief.
With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Council questions for city manager.
Yes, I was curious how well attended the two forums you held on marijuana ordinance ideas.
I think they were fairly well attended. I would say there was about an average of 25 at each open house. Seems like we get a lot of people right at the beginning, and then it kind of tapers off, and we'll get another bunch later. There is one more forum. This is an excellent chance to be heard regarding adult use marijuana and what kind of regulations you want to see here in the city regarding adult use marijuana. The last will be from 3 to 6 on Thursday at the Tascadero Lake Pavilion. So it's this upcoming Thursday, March 2nd, I believe, is the day. People seem to be enjoying the format. They're very informative. I've been at the last two talking to people, and it's interesting to hear different perspectives. So I've enjoyed them.
Go ahead.
Rochelle, maybe you could let the public know, in case they're concerned about coming and speaking publicly, about their views, really what their opportunity is at this last, not forum, but the gathering.
So these are an open house format. You can come anytime during that period that we are here. When you come in, a staff member will ask if you'd like to sit and talk with them one-on-one. So you'll be assigned a staff member who will go through a series of probably about 10 questions trying to figure out what your concerns are related to marijuana, whether it be outdoor growing, commercial growing, industrial processing, retail sales, smoking, where you want to smoke. So we go through the gamut and try and kind of ferret out different things and find out, because as we sit there and we try and craft regulations, we want to make sure that we're crafting something that we can all be good neighbors with. So it's one-on-one. We're not taking names. Do not be afraid to talk or any of that. It's just a very safe forum to get your opinions heard.
Other council questions? No, and I think when this first issue came up with the state changing the rules at the state level, and there's still always a little non-alignment between federal law and state law, but as usual, local government steps up and tries to come up with the best solution we can for our local community, and we're going through a very extensive public process. We have learned in our community to, if we're going to err, we're going to err on the side of more public process. We want to hear all the concerns people have. We have a couple of these public hearings even before we get to discussion at a planning commission and a city council level, where we'll have more opportunities for public input. So we truly want to find the best solution we can for our community and basically allow as much freedom as we can, meet any medical key needs people may have, but in a way that does not provide problems for your neighbors or anyone else. So we're going to go through that process extensively. You'll hear more. And I think, thank you, our planning staff has done a very good job of getting this input going. So Phil, good job for your team. If there's no other questions for our city manager, we will open it up to the public. We have a community forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to all of us on any item that is not on the agenda tonight and that is under our jurisdiction. We just ask that you come forward, state your name for the record, and you have a few minutes to speak. Welcome.
Good evening, City Council, Mayor, and all fellow residents. My name is Dana Holla. I am a lifetime resident, so I can really appreciate tonight's awards to Twin Cities, a recognition. I, too, have been sewn up a couple times by them in a great, great facility. I want to thank you, Mayor, and Roberta Fonzi, for preserving our water rights. I think it's extremely important that we preserve those water rights, but not only that, but be good stewards of it. And so I really want to thank you for that. And to the outgoing folks retiring, Marcia, roll call will never be the same. When watching you on TV, every time it comes to you in roll call, it just like resets the whole thing. You've been a great part of it and a great stability to the council. Thank you for your service, and to Dave also for his longtime service. I did contact John over on Ensenada, or off of Via there, the one that's going into the creek, and when he heard that he was possibly going to be able to move back into his house, he darn near came to tears. Him and his wife have been so gracious with this whole thing, and they've been staying at Motel 6 on their own dime, but when they heard of the possibility of being able to return to their house, they were just overwhelmed and very, very appreciative. And you were talking about who showed up that night. He was even impressed that the, not parole, the, what do you call that when they...
wherever police explorers were,
yes,
there.
Yes, police explorers and those that check on... probation, thank you very much, probation officers. And so greatly appreciated. I don't think he's had a chance to express that. But the main reason I'm here today is because of the toilet paper lining the creek at the high water mark, and it's all the way from here, City Hall, down to the Salinas River, and it all comes from the vagrancy, not the homeless. The homeless have a great place to go. We provide for that, and they take advantage of it. The vagrancy of those who choose not to have a roof over their head and choose to use drugs. And there are those few that also are purely mentally ill. But we need to take pride in our creek. This water that comes from our creek ends up in Monterey Bay. I don't know how long it would take if you put a tracer on a little ball and drop it in here and see how long it takes to get to Monterey Bay, but I'm sure it wouldn't be but a couple of days. So anyway, if we could, please, please look into cleaning up the creek, taking care of the vagrancy, and cleaning up the toilet paper along the creek bed. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Marty Brown. I've lived in Atascadero since 1972. I'm very proud of our city. It is a safe and good place to raise families. It is beautiful with oak woodlands, hiking trails, mountains in view, wildlife, and the Salinas River and its riparian habitat, streams and creeks. It is up to all of us to protect and enhance this precious environment we are fortunate to live in. The issue of concern that brings me and others here this evening is litter, specifically styrofoam. Styrofoam is composed of benzene and styrene, both of which are known as human carcinogens and have been linked to incidences of both Parkinson's and leukemia. Toxic chemicals leach out of these products into the food that they contain, threatening human health and reproductive systems. Our landfills are loaded with plastics and styrofoam, which takes 500 years to decompose. In doing creek and beach cleanup, we find so much styrofoam left in creeks and on land, most of it coming from takeout containers and packaging materials. It is the primary source of urban litter and the main pollutant of oceans, bays, and other water sources. As a longtime volunteer at a local wildlife rescue and rehabilitation center, I have witnessed birds and other animals choking and starving because of ingested styrofoam. It breaks your heart, namely because this suffering and death could easily have been avoided. San Luis Obispo City Council voted unanimously to ban the use of expanded polystyrene foam food and drink containers and required food vendors to use eco-friendly, recyclable, biodegradable, or compostable food and drink containers. Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande, and Morro Bay have all signed on. There is a grassroots effort to have each city in the county sign on to having a countywide ban on styrofoam food and drink containers. I'm asking you to do this. for the health of humans and wildlife. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Hi, Mayor and City Council members. My name is Debbie Buckheim, and I'm here to talk about, ask you to please do what you can to ban styrofoam. As far as litter, I used to not give too much thought to it, other than it was unsightly and covered up the beauty of nature. Styrofoam and other litter just doesn't end up in landfills, though. If you've ever picked up trash on coastal cleanup day at our local beaches and creeks, you'd see truckload after truckload of this material clogging the waterways. My personal experience with styrofoam arrived in the form of a western grebe, a seabird who spends most of its life on the water. I was working as a supervisor at Pacific Wildlife Care at the time, and that is the only nonprofit local wildlife rescue and rehabilitation group in our county. And this little bird came to us emaciated and weak. The cause, we found, was the result of styrofoam debris that he had maybe mistaken for food. It was lodged in his throat, preventing food from entering his stomach. As a result of his weakened and starved condition, he died in my hands before we could help him. I know most of us will never have a direct experience of what our human actions will have on other creatures. But if you care for other species at all, you'll try to do whatever is in your power to avoid as much damage to them as possible. I contacted our local waste management headquarters in Texas. They stated that they do not recycle styrofoam because it's too costly and time-consuming. We have to stop burdening the earth with our trash. We're burying ourselves in it, especially trash that does not biodegrade, that contains known cancer-causing chemicals and cannot be recycled. Please, let's ban styrofoam. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Welcome.
Council and council members and Mayor O'Malley. I'm Janine Ranz, and I actually am from San Luis Obispo. I'm here representing our agency, our little nonprofit called Slow Foam Free. I'm speaking tonight to urge your council to address the problem of polystyrene, commonly known as styrofoam, which is not recycled, compostable, or biodegradable. We were here a year and a half ago to present this and urged your council to get rid of this environmental trash program, but nothing happened. So we're here tonight to do this again and ask your council to begin work on this. I'm sure you're aware now that somebody mentioned we are four county cities that have passed this, and our one line says that it prohibits the use of expanded polystyrene food or drink containers and the retail sale of non-encased expanded polystyrene. And I'm proud tonight to report that 99% of San Luis Obispo restaurants and grocery stores are all foam-free. When we were here in November 2015, there were 70 cities that in California that had passed the EPS ordinance. Today, there are 99, with two more on the way, Culver City and Long Beach. So others here tonight have the facts why foam needs to be banned, so I won't repeat those. What I want to urge your council to do is get this done. The other four cities, particularly San Luis, spent a year researching facts and figures. We had local coverage multiple times by the Tribune and KSBY News. Over the past 3 years, we have passed out hundreds of our slow foam brochure at Earth Day and other local events, helping people to know why this is bad. I researched your plans to adopt a solid waste diversion rate of 60% and options for increased recycling, waste diversion, and education outreach to meet your city's goals. As noted by SLO and other waste facilities, polystyrene foam is estimated at 20 to 25% in landfill. If you get this foam eliminated by your ordinance, you have already addressed part of your goal. Also, we can begin to work toward Governor Brown's 75-25 initiative by 2020. California cities need to reduce their landfill by 75%. So to conclude, we urge your council to follow the footsteps of the city of Pismo Beach. They had unanimous support at the end of our presentation in October 2015. City Council had their ordinance done and in place 3 months later, by December 2015. There is no reason Atascadero can't do this. Of the 7 ordinance pages, 3 pages are standard definitions that are copied from the other cities. You can begin to let your businesses and the community know of your decision immediately. And in 3 months, we have an ordinance by mid-state fair when we're going to have thousands of tourists in town. You'll be foam-free. Slider day, no polystyrene.
Thank you. Any other speakers?
Hi, my name is Raybel Gams, and I came to ask you to please pass an ordinance against polystyrene use. I hope I'm saying that wrong. Foam. It's non. Can't talk tonight. Got too old. It's not biodegradable, and I'm tired of seeing it on our beaches, and it is killing our wildlife, marine life. It does cause cancer, and it creates a lot of trash that we all have to pick up. So I'm asking you to please pass an ordinance to get rid of, I'm going to say foam use. And then I wasn't going to talk about this, but I got triggered by the first gentleman that spoke about vagrancy and mentally ill. And as Tom knows, I get kind of off the rails on this. But the mentally ill do not choose to live on the streets. They're on the streets because we as a society will not take care of them and give them the medical treatment they need. And I speak from personal experience because I have a severely mentally ill son who's now in his 40s who has severe schizophrenia. So there isn't a small part of the homeless population that is mentally ill. It's a large part of the people on the streets with mental illness. So I just got my dander up and thought I'd educate you all. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, and good to see you again. Welcome, next speaker.
Good evening. My name is Emily Chapman, and I live and own a business in Atascadero. From 1980 until 2014, I had been a food service manager working primarily in natural foods groceries and owning my own cafe. Can you hear me? In all that time, I have never offered styrofoam as a packaging option, and in fact have worked under directives to offer the most cutting-edge recyclable and compostable options as they became available. These products have now become commonplace in the inventories of every wholesale food service and paper companies nationwide, as well as readily available online. My research shows that these products are already dropped in cost by 30% by the time I had stopped ordering them in 2014. They are locally available via direct delivery from Focus Packaging, Tapia Brothers, and Saladino's in Fresno, as well as Giordano's in Santa Barbara, to name a few. All these companies deliver to Atascadero. I spoke directly to Mike Gaspari, the regional sales manager at Giordano's, who shared some very interesting facts. Their container and packaging inventory has changed from 75% foam products to 25% eco-friendly, from 75 to 25, and now it's completely flip-flopped. So now it's 75% eco-friendly products to 25% foam. Primarily due to consumer-driven preferences and initiatives such as the foam ban here in Slo County. Furthermore, he stressed that once foam is no longer offered and their inventory can be devoted to foam-free, prices on eco-friendly packaging will indeed decrease since their buying power in larger quantities will translate to their wholesale prices to the customer. As a food service manager whose department relied heavily on packaging, I have always been held directly responsible for all costs associated with my department, including food, labor, and, of course, packaging. I can tell you that while it is always a challenge, good management and fiscal practices, portion control, and research pricing have made me a very successful manager and owner for 37 years. It is no surprise that smart companies control their packaging costs via close and constant examination of handling, inventory, employee training, and careful allocation to the customer. Please realize that the cost associated with changing to eco-friendly is not a viable argument not to join the ban. Styrofoam is and has always been an environmental nightmare. It also is very harmful when microwaved, imparting its petrochemicals components directly from the vessel into the food it carries. I did a lot of research. Where's your that container there? That one that woman has. Oh, am I out of time? So a foam container like that is about 10 cents. It just went up in price. They're raising their prices by 8%.
Thank you.
It's about 17 cents for an eco-friendly option. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other speakers? Welcome.
My name is Deborah Skinner. I'm not here with facts and figures, but I did hastily draw a little something to show my son, saying, "Mom, why are you still building a mountain of styrofoam from the Dark Ages?" And the reason that was something I thought to write down is because I have a 32-year-old, I have a 27-year-old, and I have a 17-year-old. Since my 32-year-old started out and was a Boy Scout like these young men here, styrofoam was a discussion back then at his age, and it was something we talked about in our family. And we've gone through various periods, you know, all through all these years of what do we do about it? Do we, you know, how do we take responsibility for styrofoam? My husband and I have tried bringing our own containers to the takeout restaurants. We have our favorite spots here in town. And we were able to actually stick with that, you know, for maybe a year. And then life gets busy, and we stopped doing it. We lost the tops to the containers. They broke down eventually. We had to buy new ones. And we've talked often about how this can be done. And we thought, well, if local businesses had a container you could buy with their name on it, that could be an advertising thing, and people could actually purchase those if they love that business. And another aspect of this is the grocery stores and their use of styrofoam. I know that Food for Less, for example, puts their baked goods, like croissants and so on, on styrofoam sheets to be sold. But like the other person, the person who just spoke before me said, there's so many other ways that we can package our food. They've been out a long time, even edible food that's similar to styrofoam. I don't know if anyone here has ever tried it, but it tastes like what you get when you go to communion. It literally tastes exactly like that little circle, that the bread that you get when you take communion. It doesn't taste bad. It's very good, and it does eventually break down. So it's my hope that you guys seriously consider making this ordinance to bring us forward. It can't just be the responsibility of the buyers. I think if you know, sometimes we do like government to get involved and say and help us raise our standard of what we want to see in our communities. I'm hoping you guys will consider that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other speakers, please step forward. And if you intend to speak, I'd suggest you go ahead and line up at least one person behind, and we can make sure everyone gets an opportunity to speak. Welcome.
Thank you. It's been very interesting to be here. My name's Dr. Carol Ann Jones. I'm a retired doctor of chiropractic who moved here because my grandson lives down the street from me and was just born in January. I have a lifelong interest in health, and I've lived all over the country, but my last stop was Northern California, where I live near the Yuba River, and I volunteered to help promote the Yuba River. I learned a lot about trash and used to educate people about how long their dog poop and their their cigarette butts and so on lasted. So I took a look at Styrofoam just to refresh my memory, and 500 years has been given as the time it breaks down, but that's an issue of debate. Maybe it breaks down in 500 years. Maybe it never breaks down. But it never breaks down, but it does break up. And that's why birds and sea life think it might be food and get clogged up with it and die. And other people have mentioned the human effects of it. We don't want this to be around for people to remember us. And I realize this is not the biggest issue we have to face or the most dramatic, but it's a no-brainer, isn't it? It's, you know, sometimes there are small things you can do that make a difference. And we don't need the styrofoam. We need to ban it. We need to encourage the people, the businesses that have already eliminated it, use other options, and as somebody else said, not have our grandchildren and great-grandchildren saying what was wrong with those people.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker.
Hi, my name is Robert Skinner, and I too am here in supporting of banning the foam. And one item that I don't know if it's been mentioned is that the ordinances, they have a provision for local merchants that they will be able to transition out of this. It's not like if you enact a law overnight that there's going to be a hardship on those businessmen. So, you know, let's keep that in mind too. And I'm hoping that you guys will consider an ordinance to ban the phone.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. Seeing no one come forward, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the council. And I want to thank all of you for your courteous participation in our community forum. And it's always appreciated, and everyone gets a chance to speak. We had a couple of items discussed. Again, the reason we have community forum is for you to tell us about things that aren't on the agenda, and if it's not on the agenda, we of course can't take any action or have a lot of discussion, though we do like to have staff respond to some degree. And I know if Chief Haley were here prompting our wake-up call for our police representative here, that we probably review a little bit of the camping ordinance and how that is works to. I know police get very active with calls about concerns by businesses, but we also work very closely with our various homeless programs trying to get folks there. But there is also sometimes some enforcement issues. Could you just touch on that a little bit? Then we might deal with creek cleanup issues separately.
Yes. With that ordinance that we put in place a couple years ago now, we were actually able to use that on a daily basis, just as another resource for us to try and find proper housing for our for the homeless if we can, or enforce the laws of the camping ordinance that we have put into place. Along with that, we routinely contact the population and trying to give them the resources that we have available, and we work closely with our homeless shelter to get as much out there as we can. So.
Thank you. And as far as the styrofoam topic, I used to be a member of the Integrated Waste Management Authority, and I had certainly come up that there before. I'm going to be returning to that board, and I'm sure that'll be a topic again. I always like to see a countywide solution rather than city by city. But I would agree there's hard to find any value in styrofoam. So I'll give you credit. I have to say, actually, I have to admit this. The first argument I had with my wife 42 years ago was over styrofoam. I'm just out of UCSB, economics major, specializing in natural resource and environmental economics. She had a styrofoam cup. She threw it in a campfire. And like somebody coming out of UCSB, we had a discussion. So I understand. And so I'm sympathetic. I am pleased with the approach many businesses have taken when we first looked at this. There weren't as many options. There are a lot of options for businesses now, and I encourage that. Certainly that volunteer decision, I think in some ways it's phasing out. There's also something a little encouraging that before there'd never been an option for recycling styrofoam, but there is a relatively new company that has come up with an ingenious process. They're making park benches out of it, a lot of a process. It's kind of interesting. So there is some new technological options. It comes down to one issue that we will be addressing statewide is our whole recycling program is in shambles in California. So there's a lot of work to do on that area. Styrofoam is one component of that. But we have, when we're paying money for things that you can recycle, like glass and aluminum, and not getting any reimbursement for that, the state does not pass the money back, that's really a big problem. And so I'm concerned about some of these issues. I want to be systematic, and I've worked very closely with Senator Monning on this at a California level on trying to get the whole recycling program kind of back on track. So I think it's a topic we'll take a look at. I wouldn't rule out that discussion in the future, and I thank you for your participation. We'll have a little discussion as a council on that particularly, but I also want to really work on recycling from a little broader picture, that there really are a lot of problems right now I want to try to address. So I will follow up on that personally. Without any other staff comments before we move on to our first item? Seeing none, if no objection by council, we will move on to our first public hearing, which is the California Building Code updates. I understand we may be doing a little change in plan for the evening. I'm going to ask first Mr. Phil Dunsmore, tell us where we are.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Yes, I'm going to abbreviate this staff report tonight a little bit from what was previously planned. We had planned to introduce an ordinance to you that effectively would have incorporated the latest state update of the California Building Code into our municipal code. Unfortunately, upon printing and publishing the ordinance, we did notice that there was some somewhat substantial typographical errors that would really materially affect the ordinance the way it was presented tonight. I think we have those ironed out now. We'd like to bring that back to you on the 14th of March. So we're going to be suggesting that we continue that to a date certain on March 14th. But let me also just use the opportunity to go through a little background of what this process is. It's essentially what the state does every 3 years. They update the California Building Code. And whether we like it or not here at the city, that becomes effective on January 1st of that third year. So this year, it became effective January 1st of this year, 2017, which means that all the construction permit applications that we received after the first are processed under that new building code. And what we do by incorporating that in our municipal code is simply recognize those latest building codes. At the same time, we're given an opportunity to do what's called local amendments. As long as they're not less restrictive than the California building code, we can also add things in that respond to Atascadero's uniqueness, local, climatic, topographical features, things like that. So we did have a couple of suggestions that we were going to recommend along those lines to you. That's where we had some typographical errors on the side of the fire code amendments that we were suggesting and, you know, possibly some of the building code amendments that we'll be suggesting. But anyway, that's really all I wanted to give you at this point. I can answer questions in general, but the recommendation tonight is to continue to date certain to March 14th, and we'll have all of the information to you at that point in time.
Thank you. And I think there are some complexities. Does our city attorney want to add any comment on that, or is that sufficient? We certainly can act on the recommendation by council.
Yes, I could add a little bit to what Mr. Dunsmore said. Procedurally, what you need to do is, since this was noticed as a public hearing, is open the public hearing, ask if there's anyone in the public that wanted to speak on this item. and then if there is, hear them. And if there's not, then you would continue the public hearing to a date certain, which I understand is proposed to be March 14th. That way you don't need to re-notice the public hearing. And there's also an opportunity at this point, if any council members would have questions of Mr. Dunsmore or seek to have him include something that you think might be important at the March 14th hearing, to bring that up now so that he'll have an opportunity to do that.
Thank you. So with that, we will essentially have a longer public process on this item, and I think that is fine. What I'm going to do is first open it up to council questions, as we usually do after a staff report, see if there's any additional questions council may have that they'd like to have direct staff to bring back to the date certain of March 14th, and then I'm going to open up to the public and see if anyone has any input. So I'll just begin from my left, going to my right. Any council comments or questions?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. When I read this, I was trying to understand what additional requirements we placed here in the city of Atascadero beyond what the code itself called for. And I could understand that in the first instance, the code actually deleted the requirement for a fire bell on an alarm system, but we wanted to keep that requirement. That made sense to me. But I was trying to understand that in the previous instances, in, you know, 3 years ago and 6 years ago and 9 and 12, et cetera, when the council, you know, had adopted each of these codes, there were some additional requirements that we had adopted in the ordinance. And so I sat down with the city manager and the fire marshal today and asked a couple of questions. And to answer some of my questions would probably take a little bit of time, I don't think too much, but in particular with the additional requirements that we list starting on page 47 of our agenda package and on page 48, I would like the fire marshal to spend a little time before March 14th and be able to come back to us and show what these additional requirements we've imposed are. And I think in particular these are instances where we're requiring sprinklers on smaller buildings than is required in the state code. And I want to make sure I understood that correctly, perhaps a matrix or something to show here's the state requirement, here's ours. But that could take a little bit of time, and so I was asking for the rest of the council to concur with asking for that information for the March 14th meeting.
Okay, well, we'll ask for consensus on that. Let's go ahead and hear what all council members have to say, and then I'll redirect to staff what I think we have by consensus to go forward with. So I do have that was Mr.
I thought you were going left
Burbeau,
to right.
And I will just go to left to right, so go ahead.
I would just ask that we have a redlined version of the current code, redlined with the changes, and that way it's easier to see what's changed versus just looking at the whole thing.
I'd like a little bit more information about the tiny house habitable room, whether this is on a permanent foundation or these are mobile homes, just a little more than is in the report.
And Councilmember Moreno, she's on spot with what I was thinking. I'd like to see changes, what is now, so that's what I ditto Councilmember Moreno said.
Okay, any other suggestions by council? Then let me add, I think I would concur. Certainly the red line sounds good. Of course, being colorblind, it doesn't mean a lot to me, but I certainly support everyone else having that. I don't think there's any objection. I, too, would be interested in more detail about tiny homes, and that is an option, so you might just be prepared. What I would suggest is Councilwoman Fonzie and I often meet with the city manager prior to council meetings as mayor, Mayor Pro Tem. Maybe you could join us at that next opportunity, and we could just have a little discussion to make sure we are synced up, that you are prepared for any questions we may have, or you can answer them ahead of time. At least, I don't know if I think we are on the same track there, just have a little more interest in what the options would be for our community, if any, or concerns. As far as the Was that Councilman Burbo? I got it closer this time. It's primarily on the fire sprinkler area or any areas where, and I think I understand we've said as a council, we're very reluctant to add any additional code to anything beyond the state. So was that the only area you were tuned into, or did you identify other areas where we might have?
That was the particular one I was tuned into, and I didn't want to dissect the entire thing.
Yeah.
Of course, it was not a red line version.
Yeah.
But in particular, those items listed on pages 47 and 48
are
what I would like to
have
clarified.
I think it's a good discussion to go through. Fortunately for the new fire chief, he pretty much replayed the tape of Kurt Stone, former fire chief. And I have to say that I was... it's partly my fault, Councilman, because when this discussion came up some time ago, there was quite a bit of discussion. I think I asked because we were very reluctant to add anything to the code. But the fire chief at the time made a pretty convincing case to basically safety issues. So I think it's good for us to reconsider that. Certainly, because I think we are very reluctant to add rules, but that was such a compelling argument of literally the protection of life. Like, no deaths occurred in any residential building that had fire extinguishers. So that was what convinced me at the time, and I think it's good to repeat that. So if you, between Mr. Dunsmore and Fire Chief, be prepared to go through that whole section, and we'll have to revisit that. I think the state code has changed some since then, that they now have more requirements in line with where closer to where we were, but we do need to consider that as a policy issue and revisit why we came to that conclusion before, and do we still hold that? Is that clear for you, or do you have some redirection for our council on clarifying those questions?
I think that's pretty clear. We'll be able to bring that back at the next council meeting. We'll have a good explanation on why we have sprinklers ordinances that may be a little more strict than what the fire code is requiring.
Thank you. Any other council? I think we are consensus going to add that. I'll go ahead and open it up to the public. Would anyone in the public like to comment on this? Recognizing if you do ask a question tonight, we will be able to perhaps follow up with a more detailed answer on March 14th. Welcome.
Good evening. Tim McCutcheon. recently on a home inspection, I'm a local realtor, the home inspector explained to me that the new code was removing fire doors between garages and residents, and to my recollection, that's about a 50-year requirement that's been going on for a long time, and if that's true, I would ask that you would not get that removed from the city ordinances, at least have a look at that and be sure. I've seen many homes that have had fires either in the home and there was no fire in the garage or vice versa, and they say that most of our fires come from the garage, so I would surely hate to see that fire door be removed from the code. It's not really that expensive, so that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Just go ahead and add that to the list. And again, I think fire safety issues, we do want to have extra consideration. Anyone else from the public, pro or con, we're talking about regulations primarily on housing. So no one coming forward, will close public comment, bring it back to council. I think...
No, you don't want to close public comment. So
mistake. Okay. That's why we have a city attorney. We are not officially closing public comment because we're going to continue this public hearing to date certain March 14th, and at that time there may be some additional staff input, and we will continue the public hearing and public input at that time and then come back to council for a decision. So with that, do we need a formal motion, or may I make that continuation?
Why don't you go ahead and do a motion?
I'd entertain a motion to continue this to date certain March 14th.
Also move.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilmember Burbeau, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Burbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item is a management report, item C1, Property Assessed Clean Energy PACE Program. And I will turn it over to our city manager. This was a request by council for a review of this item that had come up by various members of the public. I understand staff is going to give a brief review of what our staff report was before and some guidance.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm actually going to turn it over to Deputy City Manager Laura Christensen.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council. So back in April 2016, staff brought a staff report to you regarding the approval of some PACE program providers in the city of Atascadero. So really quick, I just want to go over again just for everybody what PACE is. PACE is Property Assessed Clean Energy, and it's a financing mechanism that's available to residents within a local jurisdiction where that local jurisdiction has approved these PACE program providers. And this these program providers provide financing for eligible energy and water efficiency and renewable energy projects. And this financing mechanism actually adds the cost of those projects on as an assessment to the property tax bill. Following, really quick, I'll tell you, as you can see on the slide, PACE has been approved in various levels and various program providers have been approved throughout the county here, through county and various cities. There's three program providers that are operating throughout the county. There's California First, there's the HERO program, and then there's Y-Green. In Atascadero, back in 2010, along with most other jurisdictions in the county and the county as well, California First was approved by resolution in 2010. Those loans didn't actually begin taking place in the city or be available to residents until 2014, once California First worked out some of the assessment issues that went with how it was placed on the property tax roll and some issues with lenders and approving loans for homes that carried these assessments. In April 2016, as I mentioned, the City Council reviewed a proposal for two additional PACE providers, the HERO program and Y-Green. At that time, Council had decided to take no action and requested that those program providers go back out and do community outreach, talk to lenders and realtors in the county who had expressed some reservations with the program and were looking for additional information. Since that time, in May of 2016, the County of San Luis Obispo hosted a financing workshop up in North County, and those program providers, HERO and Y-Green, had representatives there to meet with the North County Realtors Association and other interested persons regarding the PACE program and energy financing. Also, since that time, both HERO and Y-Green have reached out to council and staff to provide some additional information with how the financing works, with some of the questions that council asked about the assessments and how those go first on the title versus the mortgage. And so they've kind of provided that information and how that's been worked out throughout the state. And in your packet, we've also provided you, council has received communications over the past year, both in favor and opposed to the program. And so as part of the packet, everything we received prior to going to print were included in the packet for you, so you could see all of those various communications. And where we're at now, council at the January 10th council meeting by consensus asked us to bring it back for you guys to discuss further now that there had been some additional information provided by the PACE program providers as well as some of those lenders and the North County Realtors Association. California First is operational in the city, and there are loans that have been approved for properties here through the California First program. And authorization of additional PACE program providers would require the city to pass some resolutions authorizing those program providers to operate. And so where we're at now is staff is just really looking for direction from council as to how you would like to move forward. And some options would be to approve one or the other of those program providers who've come forward, to approve none of them, or to have, in general, not to have PACE program providers in the city. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. And my approach tonight is going to be a little different, because this is a little different process we're going through. We've had a public hearing on this before with more in-depth staff report. It's gone on in the community for a while. The council members have heard from a lot of members of the public, pro and con of these kind of programs. And so I felt it was important. Well, let's at least have a discussion about this, because as you may understand, council members can't just get together at coffee and come to a conclusion behind closed doors. We really can't talk to each other about a lot of things that you've all sat around and talked about. So for us to have that conversation time, we need to have this formal time here. So it might be surprising to you, but we don't really know what each other are thinking on some of these things, and that's kind of why we're going through this. I don't know that we need a lot more information. We have information. We need a chance to talk with each other about it. So what I'm going to propose is, first we go through, I'm going to ask each council member to share what we call ex parte. It's not required on this one, but it's a good place to start, because we've all heard different things. And what ex parte is where we share with you anything we've heard outside of this public process that has influenced potentially how we might vote on something. So just anything that comes to mind isn't necessarily reportable, but I want to give each council member a chance to say, well, here's something I've heard that, you know, really gives me some thought, and it also gives you an opportunity if you have a disagreement or think that wasn't a good idea we heard, you have a chance to comment on that as well. So we'll first go through ex parte, then we'll have a chance where council members are going to ask questions of staff. Then we're going to open up to the public, and I'm going to ask the PACE folks, since they're like an applicant, to speak first, say what they'd like to say, and then we will open up to general public. And then my goal tonight is, I don't know what we will decide, but I'd like to make a decision tonight so everybody kind of knows where we're going, what we're going to do, and staff has a clear direction. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and any council member would like to share what we think of as ex parte on this. Go ahead, Roberta.
Sure, thank you. I have contacted several people in the community. I've spoken with several realtors, the Board of Realtors. I have talked to two title officers to ask about title questions regarding the lien and super lien on properties and removal of that position to a subjugated position. Talked to three different lenders and also received many emails from PACE proponents in the neighborhood. So, yes, I've had a lot of research on this one.
Thank you. As I, too, have spoken to several realtors, brokers, lenders, issues like e-signing documents, trying to refinance, and there's a little confusion between what the federal government says that FHA will allow and what the state of California has done in this, I think it was last year. So there's a little confusion. I'm not hearing anything positive, absolutely nothing positive whatsoever from any of those groups. So I'll be interested in this conversation and what the rest of you have learned as well.
Thank you. Anyone else? Go ahead.
I think we've probably gotten the similar emails that came to all of us, for or against. There are probably a couple in favor. I don't know that we had a lot of emails. I talked with a couple lenders. I called a tax accountant as well as the county assessor, who then referred me to the auditor controller's office. So I had just a little bit of conversation there. And then I went and looked online because I wanted to find out, like, Fannie Mae, Federal Housing Finance Agency, where do they stand? And so it was hard to find anything current, but the most significant amount of information from 2009, 2011, 2012 was all not happy with it. So that is a bit disconcerting.
Yes, I received the same emails. I also had discussions with a couple of different realtors.
also with a couple different mortgage brokers and a solar provider in the community. And I believe one of the people I spoke with, because he requested a phone call, Mr. Hauber from the mortgage house, is here this evening. So,
thank you. And I, too, I think the first conversation I had was in a location where folks in the solar energy industry brought it to my attention and thought, well, this is a positive thing, able to potentially expand solar energy use for residents. I then started hearing the question about, well, can these loans be subordinated? It tends to be a problem people were having. I then heard that, well, maybe that issue's been resolved at some level. And then I've say since we first had hearings, I've really received quite a few complaints and concerns, really more on some of folks' practices. I think it's one of those examples where, you know, a few bad apples really spoils a lot of things, and there's been some, whether it's private contractors or different individuals working on this, has gotten some folks that may be naive in the financial world have really got themselves in some messes, and I've heard about that from a number of folks. So I think, you know, I've got concerns. I certainly, my first instinct is, why are we hearing this to begin with? Because I think we tend to want to stay out of regulation where we can. But the reason it's brought before us, talking to folks in government, is because this is something where it potentially can be attached to the assessment, and it affects your property tax in a form of a lien. And so it's a different animal than just an equity loan issue. And because of that, it requires some authorization, either city or county. And I think because it ties to property and property tax, it's a little extra red flag for me. I'm not sure that I am comfortable with that, with the folks that end up having their property encumbered in a way that they may not entirely understand. I also feel like it should be a little bit left up to individuals. So I'm really torn on this one. I can say I'm open, but I would share with you some of the questions I've heard and concerns I've heard in the community, and so I'm look forward to anyone offering additional insight in that. I think you've heard everyone has kind of struggled with this one. That's why we want to have this discussion. So are there any council questions of staff of anything they've heard so far?
Yes, I believe some of my questions are relevant for staff. And I forgot to mention I did substantial reviewing on the internet, looking up both the three providers and also issues involving complaints about this program, that sort of thing. So some looking at some of that would at least influence some of my questions this evening, if not my decision. Do we, Laura, know at all how many PACE loans or whatever have been processed by CalFIRST within the Atascadero? Do we have any way of knowing that?
I did call the county recorder's office in order to find that out. I would have to go sit at the recorder's office and go loan by loan. But what they did say was it's a lot in the county since August of 2014, and they're recording about 16 a week now across for the entire county, but gotcha. They are recording 16 a week now.
And I want to make sure, I mean, this is presented as if this is, you know, once you go through signing this, there's no work on the part of the city. In one of the agreements in the back, though, it does talk about us, you know, filing documents and that sort of thing. I want to make sure that beyond any documents related to the initial approval, is there anything the city has to do, that city staff has to do relative to this program?
No, and we approve the resolution, and that is the end of what the city does, and then the rest is taken care of by the providers themselves.
Okay. And let's see here. On page 90 of our agenda packet, towards the bottom, it says SB 555 authorizes formation of community facilities districts, which everybody on council is familiar with those. But I was confused because the last sentence in that paragraph says the Y-Green program that is currently being offered involves annexation into a CFD. Now, these pages on page 90 is from the staff report last year. So I'm not, and maybe if you can't answer that, maybe the Y-Green folks could, that I believe are present. But if that's correct, that seems like that would be in some way, shape, or form involve the city. So I guess I'm confused as to how their particular product would involve a CFD. Well, that's up to the mayor if you want to, because we'll be asking questions of the presenters.
I would say if staff don't have an answer to your question, that's fine. We will open it up. The practitioners will have an opportunity to respond first, and I would think they'd want to answer any questions we have mentioned.
So if you could just keep track of my question when you come up, you could try to address that. And on page 92 of the staff report, which was, again, from last year's report, in the middle it says, although the city has authorized California First program to be offered in Atascadero, its program administrator will need to execute an indemnification and insurance agreement to further mitigate the level of risk. They were already in play and already offering programs. Is this an additional requirement, or had they not provided that? Or
that's not with us. They have to do that with the resident when they enter into the agreement with them.
Okay.
That's between them and the resident.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Thank you. And let's see here. I think you answered that question. That'll be a question for one of them. If you bear with me. This would be a question actually for the city attorney. I don't know if you are of any awareness in doing, well, it's in the staff report on page 156 of the agenda packet. LA County hit with suit over eco upgrade loans. And of course, you know, there may be no merit to the suit, but I'm wondering what is the exposure of, you know, municipalities such as ours?
I'm not familiar with that suit.
Okay. Okay. All righty.
I can maybe answer that a little bit.
Okay.
So in that, what that lawsuit is about, LA County is the government agency that partners with the HERO program in order to meet the state requirements to provide this. And that's why LA County is named as part of the lawsuit, because they are the municipal agency, which is like we're the joint powers authority that we would enter into. LA County is the municipal agency that's doing the HERO program in LA County. And so as they're suing that, as the lawsuit was for that program, it was also the municipal agency. So the city is not the municipal agency that is offering the loans. All we're doing is authorizing. We're not the program administrator or the municipal agency that is part of the program.
Okay. So if somebody in our community had a similar complaint, it would be with the Western Riverside County.
Yes.
Those folks. Gotcha. Okay. And I think that's all I had for staff. Thank you.
Other council questions before staff?
Yes.
Go ahead.
A question regarding the lender of the PACE program being able to participate if we don't do this in Atascadero. Does that mean it's banned from within the city limits, or how does this work?
The two additional program providers, unless you authorize them, they cannot do loans with residents in the city based on the program. So they have to have the authorization from the city in order to contract with the residents. They can only operate once the municipality where the resident lives has authorized the program.
So that wouldn't be just the assessed one. That would be like a CFD. It would be actually the other two as well, the California First and Y-Green.
California First has already been authorized by the city. So the city has already passed a resolution authorizing them. So as of right now, they are authorized to issue loans basically and provide this financing mechanism in the city, so they can continue because they have that resolution. The other two can't offer those loans and their programs until we do a resolution and enter into that joint powers authority and give them the ability to provide loans in the city.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Sure. Has the county assessor weighed in on this at all when it comes to property tax and just the this process of adding this into the role? I'm just curious if there's been any input from the assessor.
There hasn't been any that has trickled across the county or, you know, a broad range of information that has come across either from basically the cities who are participating now with some of these other ones or the county as a whole.
Have there been any complaints that, you know, you're talking about the county talking about 16 per month? We don't know how many are here in Atascadero, but have there been any complaints about, I mean, I'm certainly seeing, you know, you can find the complaints online. You can find the complaints through emails that people have emailed me, but what about the broader? Has there been any conversation about that?
I think that there's an email that was provided to you where someone has brought up some of the complaints for the county itself and some of the loans that have been done in the county. And I think Tom maybe was contacted by someone as well who has expressed some complaints with programs operating in the county. But from the assessor themselves, no, there hasn't been a discussion regarding complaints.
Thank you.
Other council questions for staff? I did receive a complicated question from a constituent who had an Atascadero business do a service for a Paso resident where Paso had approved this program, and then there were some problems, and we're wondering who should do what. Now, it doesn't matter where the business is located, it really is tied to where the residence is. And then in that case, I had heard from the city manager and the mayor of Paso Robles that the program that they had in place, similar to what we're considering, they of course had approved and now are having second thoughts because they've had a number of problems have been voiced to them. Do you have any knowledge of that or any, do you have a sense, did we get a chance to hear from the Paso city manager, is there a possibility of revisiting program that they've already approved similar to this?
I did not have a chance to connect with the city manager. I did talk to their community development director, and how the program has been working, it's been working, is what he said. So I don't know that they've run into hiccups on the city's end. That's not to say that they haven't been receiving complaints on the resident end. But for the program working and the city's involvement with it, there hasn't been issues on the city level.
Okay. Seeing no other council questions, I'm going to first open it up to the applicant, as we would call it, those that are here that are would like to offer this service and would need the council's approval in order to do that. So if you're in that situation, we would ask you to come ahead and first say who you are, and I would suggest you first try to answer the questions you've heard and then go on and share what else you would like to share.
Of course. I'm Dustin Ryland. Thank you, Mayor and council members. Dustin Ryland, the Senior Director of Market Development for the HERO program, Renovate America's HERO program. A couple of questions that came up. We do some thorough work on the compliance side of things. And what I want to start with is, since this came to your council last in April of last year, there's been a lot of modifications, including legislature. AB 2693 was a collaborative effort with the California Association of Realtors and the PACE providers to come together with additional disclosures and many different things that have to do with contractor compliance around PACE. So that all went into effect when the governor signed that in September. Our company was actually ahead of the curve on that and had implemented that in the middle of summer of last year. What that does is that does a lot of different compliance measures that I think Laura probably shared with you. It's a like a Consumer Finance Protection Bureau's Know Before You Owe disclosure form. And I can comment, I forget who it was that had the question on the lawsuit, but I can comment on the lawsuit simultaneously in that our company was involved or is involved in that allegation of that lawsuit, which is from a law firm that's in New York that loves taking on class action suits. And that's what they specialize in. They don't do anything but class actions. Hasn't been deemed to be a class action suit. And there's a lot of allegations in it that have 100% to do with us not providing mortgage disclosures because they feel that we're a mortgage company, but we're not a mortgage company. We operate under state legislation, which is AB 811, which is PACE legislation. So we're going to defend rigorously, obviously, because we're not a mortgage company. Yet at the same time, what we've done is we've actually put into place mortgage-level disclosures like the Know Before You Owe form with all of those different disclosures and all of those different TILA boxes and so forth to make sure that consumers have all of the information that they need. We even take it to the next level, and we actually have 100% confirmed term calls now. So what that means is that we have the customer step away from the contractor if they are in the home with the contractor and go ahead and do a confirmed term call on a recorded line with one of our individuals where we're able to go through and we do about a 14-minute confirmation call during that application process to make sure that the customer understands what it is that they're getting, what the product is, how it was presented. Did the contractor misrepresent anything? Did the contractor give a different price for financing than they did for a cash price? All of those different things. And we also go into a lot of elderly care questions. Are you the person that pays your bills? Are you the one that makes all of these decisions? Do you have a power of attorney? Do you have a son or daughter that do those bills for you so that we can make sure that we do a next of kin verification if we needed to as well? We also get involved with English as a second language during that and making sure that we're protecting them and making sure that we're confirming terms in their own native language. And we have multiple language spoken at our call center with 650 people there. Some of the other things that you had in the way of questions, I know that Council Member Moreno had some questions as to some old issues. 2009, 11, and 12 are ancient history when it comes to PACE because so many things have changed. The recent legislation, AB 2693, that happened in 2016, the loss reserve that was put into place in 2014 by the state. In 2015, April of 2015, we started offering subordination. So we subordinate at the time of sale or refinance to make sure that transactions can go through. I look at it from some of the different things that we do on the compliance side as well. You say that you there was a situation in Paso Robles. If our company was involved and there was a contractor dispute of any sort, we have actually compliance officers that step in and actually open up a case to make sure that that customer is not wronged in any way, shape, or form. And we even have forbearance programs that are put into place for that. And in the packet, I think that Laura shared with you, you'll see on page 7 of a slide that actually looks like this. These are the 4 different things that can happen at time of sale. We'll hear about today from your real estate community difficulties that they've seen. Well, they haven't seen any difficulties that I know of here locally because I actually just pulled up and since we go through a judicial validation process on our program. We only have 17 outstanding assessments in the county of San Luis Obispo, because it takes about 6 to 9 months before we could even go live. So I know that the issues around anything that happens in the county has nothing to do with the HERO program at this point in time. Have there been some legacy issues from people that joined the program probably in 2013 in Riverside County? I'm going to say absolutely. There are some legacy issues, and we're working through those to help those individuals that may be a contractor before we had contractor compliance things put in place, maybe didn't get the best deal that they possibly could have. But what happens when a HERO property is sold or refinanced? There's four options. It can either stay on the property at time of sale or refinance, like the legislation actually set up for it to happen that way. A HERO assessment can be assumed and stay in place at time of the sale or refi, and we actually subordinate to the first trustee lender. What that means is that we're giving away all our rights to any foreclosure or any proceeds, and that first trustee is in the first position. The third thing that can happen is the HERO assessment stays in place with a partial payoff. So say, for instance, I want to negotiate. I can say, I want $15,000 of it paid off, and we'll allow $10,000 to stay on the property tax bill. And as a new homeowner, I'll let it stay on the property tax bill. And the fourth option is just pay it off. It's just like a HELOC, just like a second or whatnot. It can just be paid off through the proceeds at the time of closing. So all of those different options are available, and I'd be more than happy to answer any other questions that come up, but this is a great option to make available as a voluntary option to your constituents. What we're seeing in the marketplace since the last time I was here is more disclosures. We're seeing more contractor compliance. We're seeing a program that's growing over the last 5 years with the acceptability with over $2 billion in financing that's happened in the state of California. It's available in over 460 communities throughout California. And we're seeing success with homeowners that want to utilize it and want to stay in their home and want to be able to beautify it and make it more energy efficient for themselves. And that's what this program was designed to do. This isn't designed for an investor flipper that wants to go and just upgrade a home and flip that house and take advantage of the marketplace. This is designed for your homeowners that want to stay in their home and do an upgrade. And some of those different issues that came up in the past were because of the fact that people sought out the ability to be able to use it in a flipping situation. And that's just not what we're designed to do. So.
Well, let's see if we have any other council questions on this. Go ahead, Councilwoman Fonzie.
Can you tell me what the interest rate is on a normal improvement?
Yeah, actually, the standard rates run in the 5% range up to the 8.35% range.
And let me just ask, is that the maximum rate? Is there a maximum rate?
The maximum rate is 8.35%, correct. And that would be on the longest-term financing.
Continue.
One of the things I've heard that is often financed is heating and air conditioning, which has a fairly small lifespan, but yet the PACE is a longer product. It's generally about 20 years or so that's on your tax roll. Could you address that?
Absolutely. All of the financing under PACE legislature is required to not go beyond its useful life. So although 5, 10, 15, 20 years is available for financing, it is not available for certain products. So certain products, like HVAC, have a useful life of about 18 years is what the manufacturers say. So we don't finance it beyond 15 years for any of the HVAC products that are out there. There's other products that actually have a useful life that's less than that and can't be financed beyond 5 years or 10 years. Most of the people that we see doing the 20-year financing, it's either solar or something that's a longer-term type of investment in the property.
And are there origination fees? So let's say I come in and I want to put in a new air conditioner. Would mm-hmm. I be paying upfront fees?
Yeah, there are fees. In our program, it's 4.99%. It's a one-time upfront. You can roll that into the financing. Many people actually decide to pay it up front, so they can do that. And that's why you'll see that someone's APR can be in the 10 percentile if they decide that they want to voluntarily roll that 4.99% fee into it.
And since subordination has come up time and again when property is sold, why don't you just subordinate it from the get-go?
It just doesn't work in the securitization market, council member. It's not to that point where it's working in the securities market. So as we see more acceptance of this over time, we've had 9 securitizations so far in the industry. As we see more securitizations, it's very possible that we'll see more acceptance of it in the future. I know that we've done over 1,000 subordinations to date, and thus what we do is we're actually, in essence, pulling that back out of the initial securitized fund and reimbursing that fund for it, and we keep it on our balance sheet. And so we've been doing that with all of those subordinations and doing our own internal collections on those.
Just looking at the slides that you gave us in the packet, it looks like there's several options for subordination, but it isn't a given that you may be able to subordinate or you may not. Is that correct?
Every subordination request that comes across our desk is granted, 100%. And also,
I'm looking at an application, and it says it may or may not, and it does have a fee.
It depends on the lender. So if there's a hard money situation, you might not get subordinated. If there is a first and a second, the first will be subordinated to, but the second will not be subordinated to. We can only subordinate to one lender, and that's why we have to use the terminology as your legal, your city attorney would tell you. You have to say may, because there are instances that will come into play, like someone having a first and a second, or where someone had a hard money lender that doesn't qualify.
Thank you.
I wanted to comment on one more thing also. Out of all of the assessments we've done as a company in the state of California, there's been over 90,000 assessments, and the HERO program has not initiated a foreclosure to date. There's also a $10 million loss reserve through the state of California to reimburse lenders in case of any defaults where they have to pick up the PACE portion, and to date that has not been tapped one single time either.
Okay, well, let's move on, because that's repeating some things we've heard before, which is fine. Well, we have a few more council questions. First, Councilwoman Moreno, followed by Councilman Burbeau.
Thank you. And so I just want to confirm, because this is one of my concerns as well, the subordination is basically just a verbal promise.
It's a recorded document, ma'am.
No, I'm saying when somebody first gets the loan, right, and then for future you say we'll subordinate upon refinance or resale, that's verbal. That's, you're saying that that's not in writing, because you may or may not be able to do that. Is that correct? I just want to confirm that.
There is nothing that is upfront on the transaction about subordination. Okay. It's if a person has a transaction, we then step in and subordinate for them, because we want to make sure there's no hindrance of any.
Right, but they have no guarantee of that. It's just a verbal, this is how we practice, but it's not in writing up front that, hey, 5 years down the line, 2 years down the line, whatever, we will subordinate. That's not in writing, correct?
Subordination isn't something that gets put out there.
Okay,
no,
that's what I want to make sure. Secondly, in the staff packet and just in other things that I've researched, it looks like ability to pay really isn't that big of an issue, that you look more at equity. And so ability to pay doesn't come into play. So somebody, doesn't matter how much they might be struggling with their bills or whatever, you guys will loan as long as there's equity in the property.
Not entirely true. Actually, recently there's been DOE guidelines that have come out that we are actually working with now. So we're actually implementing a ability to pay function right now. And by the time your judicial validation happens here, it'll be well on its way, because we plan on implementing it probably April 1st. And so you won't have the program available till late summer for any of your constituents if you decided to move forward.
Okay, and this isn't as strict as, say, a mortgage loan, right? It's, I mean, credit cards kind of almost don't
care. The average ticket here is about $21,000. Do you feel that we should actually have mortgage-level disclosures on everything?
No, I'm not saying the disclosures. I'm saying ability to pay.
Yeah, so definitely. We get into that, and that's some of the different things that we are looking at right now
Come down the line, you're working on it.
Yeah, over the next month, we will have that in play. So I would say that I can commit to this council that when the program goes live for you, you will have ability to pay as part of it.
In answering Councilmember Fonzie's question, you said the application fees and costs were 4.99%. So I'm looking at an example of a final payment summary in here, which is from, it appears to be from Renovate. So that's you, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay, so this looks more like 5.8% in addition to other costs and fees.
Yeah, so as time progresses, our companies get better and rates get more competitive. When we started our program, the rates were at 8.99 and the fees up front were 6.95. So those rates have come down over time because as more competition comes in, it drives up the level of service and down the cost of funds. And so that's probably a payoff from one of our original ones in 14. Very possible.
And then the annual program administrative fee, $25. So when I talked to the county, they charge $2 per parcel. And so you guys are charging another $23 every year for whatever.
The fees are a standard fee that gets put in that takes care of making sure that they're administering that entire process. Correct.
All right. I mean, that just seems kind of odd.
Yeah, it's not for us.
No, the county doesn't charge the $25. When I talk to the county, they charge $2, but you guys are charging $25 a year.
Right. So they have $2 per assessment period.
Right.
So that's $4. But
no, it's $1 per assessment period. So $2 per year.
Gotcha.
And so the other $23 is going to renovate, I would assume.
Not to renovate. It actually is to David Tausig and Associates and WR Cog and PFM, all of the different managers of the program.
So all the people that need to be paid for this thing to happen. Okay.
Correct.
When you look at your, you know, total interest paid, really, if you look at the total cost that they pay in the end, 42.8% of it has nothing to do with the actual purchase of the product. Last question. And yes, I said Fannie Mae, that was all old stuff, but I couldn't find anything currently where Fannie Mae says, hey, now that all this has happened, we're happy with it. So I know there's this $10 million state pool. Great that it hasn't been used. We all kind of know where the state is and its finances and ups and downs. So I don't necessarily think that's the best solution. So I'm just curious, though, I haven't seen anything from Fannie Mae or, you know, FHA saying this is great. And I know FHA is like on the cusp of bringing something out themselves to
they
start
did,
financing.
Actually. So on 7/19, and I think your staff has it so she can provide it to you. But on 7/19, FHA came out with guidance and so did the VA. So they came out with guidance that they are accepting of PACE in the first position and that there is not an acceleration of the loan or anything of that nature. It's simply whatever is in default would actually get paid first, and then the FHA or VA product would be in line. FHFA's stance at this time, which is the oversight for Freddie and Fannie, they actually still have their same guidances that are in place that state that at a time that they do not want a purchase to occur that actually has a PACE lien in the first position. So it needs to either be subordinated at that time of the transaction, which we do, or be paid off. So those are the options on a Fannie or Freddie product.
Okay.
There's also some things where in your packet you can take a look at the products that are actually available through Fannie Mae that are their lifestyle product to actually be able to refinance any type of upgrade that actually happens utilizing PACE. So they've actually come out with a product that can actually work with the PACE assessment as well. So that's through Fannie Mae. I don't have anything yet from Freddie.
For a moment, just for process, you probably, in fact, do have the answer to a lot of our questions. However, in your anticipation of wanting to answer so enthusiastically, you're kind of running over some of the council members' questions. So I'd like you to just wait till we struggle through getting our question out there, and then I'd like a shorter answer because I know it stimulates you because you have a lot of knowledge.
Sure.
let's just let the council kind of take the direction of getting their questions answered component by component. So if
sure,
you would
Mayor.
Do that, we're allowing the time, so it's not like you're going to run out of time. Go ahead, Councilwoman Fonzie.
Okay. Moreno.
Moreno, whoever you are. See, I'm completely thrown now.
When I was saying FA, actually, I think the FHA is coming out with their own thing. I don't mean PACE-related, but they're coming out with something, is my understanding. But that aside, so Fannie Mae, will Fannie Mae buy loans that have PACE assessments?
Not in the first position, unless subordinated.
Okay, and that's not guaranteed up front. That's, again, what you say, well, we'll do it, but you can't put it in writing up front.
It's not something that's up front
yep.
in the contract, but the
yep.
customer knows they can subordinate because we make it very upfront for them. But it's not part of their assessment contract.
Right, right. Thank you.
Could I just follow up on how do they know that other than you verbally tell them?
Yeah,
is there anything
well,
in writing?
We send out, yeah, that's a, oh, sorry, I cut you off. I'm so sorry. We actually send out a red box to every single customer after they actually have signed up with our program that walks them through all of the different process and how to contact our Hero Property Advisors department in case they have a sale or a refinance, that we can help them through that, and that we have different options for them from subordination to partial payoff, and all of those options are made available, and that happens within the first probably 3 weeks of them doing the transaction as a thank you, and it actually goes out as a box, as well as showing them the breakdown so that they could provide it to their accountant if there are any tax benefits for them.
So I'm hearing your answer, but I think the question has been people looking something more definitive, like it says in writing that it's not part of the initial contract, but you're saying in writing you can subordinate this loan, and here's the process. Is it that clear to folks?
It is that clear on our subordination documentation, yes.
And is it clear that it somewhere states that we will give you a subordination document and you have the option to subordinate? Like, is it really clear that that's an option everyone has?
It is very clear that that is an option that they have today. It wasn't always clear in the past because that wasn't available till April of 15.
Okay. Any other council questions?
Yes.
I think, actually, let's see. Councilmember Burbo was next, and then we'll go to Councilmember Sturdivant. Oh, this is for...
Okay. Yes, I had looked online and I saw your 4.99% origination fee, which seems to be less than Y-Green and more than, by the way around, more than Y-Green and less than California First. But do you charge program fees? Because what I looked at indicated the others too do charge program fees.
I'm not certain what okay. program fees is.
I'm not sure either, but
yeah, okay. we have a one-time 4.99% okay. up front. If you're discussing program fees in the way of maybe that $25 ongoing annual fee that your council member brought up, that could be part of the okay. program fees ongoing, but
well,
that's the only thing I know of.
Okay, I'll save that question for Y-Green, the Y-Green rep. In regards to subordination, I saw some indication that either you or one of the others or all charge a fee for subordination, like $350. Is that?
There was a $350 fee originally back in the day, mm-hmm. and we took that out and made sure that no one ever had to pay a $350 fee. So that's an old form if you're looking at that, probably from last year or maybe before last year. Because we did away with it probably within a quarter or two.
Okay. So if someone requests subordination at the time of sale?
No fee.
No fee.
Yeah.
Okay.
No fee at all.
And then I think Councilmember Moreno addressed this, and that is what I've seen on one or more of these sites is the not so straightforward as, hey, bad credit, no problem, but sort of along those lines of, you know, you can qualify for this even if you have a low FICO score or bad credit, and of course we all know that's because it's a tax assessment. And my concern or my question would be, If I can't afford to make, you know, if I can't afford to get a higher credit quality product, or, you know, roll this kind of financing into a mortgage or a HELOC or something like that, how am I going to make the, you know, pay the increased property tax assessment through this program?
That's a very good question. And so what it comes down to is this product isn't for everyone. But what I would say is that there are a lot of people that want to take advantage of this program, and they don't have the means to get a traditional loan. A perfect example, my in-laws. They own their home in Santa Barbara. They're not here locally, sorry, but they're in Santa Barbara. And they are in a situation where they are rich, they are house rich and cash, you know, cash insufficient when it comes to credit.
We understand that concept.
Yeah, okay. So what it comes down to is their home's worth $1.4 million. It's fully paid for. Their cars are all paid for. They've been retired for 10 years, and they would love to do upgrades, but the only way they could pay for something is with the cash that's in the bank. A lot of times our retirees don't want to use their cash, so they finance something and want the ability to be able to put that on their property tax bill and utilize something that's an easier fix for them. Now, it's not for everyone, but we do a FICO check on every single scenario, and our average FICO is a 701. So this is not for someone with bad credit, because we don't want to lend to someone who's going to default, because that ruins the program. We are not in the business of defaulting.
Well, if I was a judge, I'd say kind of, you know, asked and answered kind of a thing.
Sure.
Like,
well, okay.
The point has been made, and I would encourage council members to work towards getting questions that you need answered to change, to be able to make a decision tonight. There could be a lot of questions, and we still have another person to get through to ask.
Okay, understand, although... This might sound repetitive, but what I see in the sample, and this is on page 204 of our agenda, is actually an APR of 9.37. You know, and this is the sample that you provided with an interest rate of, what is it, 7.69 on a sample from May of last year, so not too far in the past.
Right.
And so it does seem like a high APR, a little higher than... or significantly higher than, you know, than the basic rates we've been talking about.
So there's kind of a consensus that people have heard you say 8 point something is the maximum. There's all these fees. We understand about sometimes various ways of getting money from folks has a different label. It's a tax. It's a fee. It adds up. People are concerned that, gee, the cost may be more than the person understands. So is there another question you have?
No, that's it for now.
Good. I scared you off enough. That's good. We'll. I would like to move on. We do have another person that wants to speak similarly to this. So do you have more questions for this person? Are we ready to hear from the other person? Go ahead.
Is there a financial incentive to the contractor who is selling this product to the homeowner?
Just that it helps them to grow their business, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's another financing tool. When they sit down at the kitchen table, it's all about cash is their first option, and then they have financing options that are available, and this could be one of them.
Okay. So initially it's just the contractor and the person who has a broken furnace or whatever it may be. When does the education portion come in, or the thoroughly disclosing of your product come in, when it's a contractor person, I need this fixed, this is how you can do it, this is how you can spend your money? When does the education piece come in?
Yeah, that's a good question. So what happens is that's why we have the recorded confirmation call, where we go over all the terms and go over all the product that's being installed and what was represented to them by the contractor, so that we actually have it on a recorded line, knowing exactly what was represented, what the product is, what they're replacing, all the different terms, before we even send out the documents to them for the actual financing documents. And then we go over the financing documents on the phone with them as well to make sure that they have a full understanding of that APR and how that APR can change from a 7.99 to a 9 point whatever you were referencing if you roll the 4.99% fee into it.
Because there's a lot of nuances here that 14 minutes is going to be kind of hard to figure out whether or not I have a first and a second. Am I going to be able to subordinate, kind of thinking the long-term picture? That's kind of a real short period of time to have a person get a real good, clear understanding of this product. So,
well, I assume that the contractor...
I think that was a statement and not a question.
Statement.
So, okay. Thank you. I would like to keep moving. I am very reluctant to ask, to cut council members off if they have a sincere question. I know from my own experience, sometimes you're kind of coming to a conclusion and you have a tendency to want, we sometimes are tempted to ask almost rhetorical questions, and I would prefer that you not hand things out while we're talking here. Thank you. And you might have a rhetorical question because you've already kind of got a conclusion and you're just trying to prove your point more. I don't think we need to do that. I think if you have a question, you need more information. I would, again, aim for short answer questions. Let the council redirect because I think we have a lot of information. We probably aren't going to understand every nuance of every program. Can we make a decision and do we understand this enough? We feel it's safe for our community. So with that in mind, did you have I think we have another person describe who you represent. If there's any questions you've heard you think you could address, and then do likewise of whatever you'd like to share with us.
Thank you. My name's Emily Goodwin. I work for Wygreen Energy Fund. I was here last year along with Dustin presenting to most of you, and I appreciate the opportunity to have a candid discussion, especially for the new members on council. And thank you to staff for your continued efforts to respond and kind of help us push this as much as we can. So quick answer to Councilmember Burbo's question about SB 555. So our program modeled to create blanket CFD districts that are applicable to each incorporated jurisdiction and made available to all eligible property owners, aka parcels, in that incorporated jurisdiction as a voluntary opt-in. And those eligible parcels undergo strict underwriting criteria before they're approved to be voluntarily opted in should they decide to move forward with the program. So I hope that answers your first question. In terms of the rates and fees, I can send you an updated rate and fee schedule and what they each constitute, but I think that would be not the best use of our time just because all of our rates and fees vary just slightly. Those also can be found on the MPower website, and it brings me kind of back to my original one of my original takeaways. PACE started as a municipal program, so PACE finance was something that many of the jurisdictions, progressive ones like those here in San Luis Obispo County, decided was a good idea to meet policy objectives to conserve water and energy and help scale renewable generation. Many of those programs created best practices throughout the last two or three years. And last year, we were fortunate enough to work with San Luis Obispo County to apply to their or participate in their competitive bid process, and were selected as such to participate as vendors of the county. And we work in concert with the MPower program, which serves all of the jurisdictions in San Luis Obispo County along with the county. So I wanted to frame it in that way, that there already has been a sort of vetting and credibility check, if you will, not only to the demand and the need for this policy initiative, but those vendors who are here in front of you tonight. So I hope that provides a little bit of larger picture context. And again, thank you for reconsidering our being here. A lot of evolution has happened in the market. Dustin touched on it in great detail. I provided a two-page color sheet that kind of walks through the evolution in the last year, and really on the second page touches on the key takeaways from the assembly bill that was just passed, AB 2693, and enacted at the start of this year, along with some of the other components at the federal level, which has absolutely strengthened the consumer protection space, the disclosure space, and made them more consistent industry-wide. Excuse me. I also included a copy of our consumer protections brochure. This is just the customer-facing brochure. We have, I think, a 29-page document that's required by our joint powers authority, which is Golden State Finance Authority. San Luis Obispo County is already an associate member of that JPA. And so you can read more about sort of what the customer gets exposed to right out of the gates in the contract negotiation process. The other handout I shared with you was something that in collaboration with Kevin Hauber, who we met through the San Luis Obispo County competitive bid process, have come up with a set of curriculum which we believe is very relevant to today's needs, today's questions and concerns, which you may hear raised from some of the realtor industry folks who are here tonight. We've been creating this over the last year, We met Kevin when he helped us facilitate training successfully both in San Luis Obispo and here in Paso Robles to not only serve contractors, but to also serve realtors and title company professionals. We executed those with great success, multiple providers. Most of the folks that came from the Paso Robles office that Tim was gracious enough to host in May, which follows a month after the last meeting when we were here in front of you last year, they walked away very happy, very educated, empowered, not afraid, knowing the basic mechanics of PACE. And so what you see in front of you is a draft concept of what we're willing to do again here and what we're trying to promote throughout the rest of the state. We work, like I said, in collaboration with our competitors to help educate and inform and empower that other stakeholder group, which in all honesty, maybe wasn't the first thing we thought of when we launched PACE, right? We deal with contractors, property owners, elected officials. Those are our key stakeholder groups. But we realized that the real estate community, the title company professionals, other lenders like Kevin really do need to understand the mechanics of PACE and the value of PACE. And the one last statement I'll make is sort of the key takeaway here is there's a real opportunity to understand, and Kevin will touch on this further, that PACE is just one of many options to help finance these particular upgrades. And these particular upgrades have incredible oversight and regulatory components to them because of the communal attribute of water and energy savings. They're just one option. There's many other to choose from. So I would ask that Kevin gets a chance to come up and sort of finish the conversation from that perspective. I'm happy to answer specific questions for you about our program. Excuse me, I'm having a little bit of an itched throat. So I'm happy to answer questions, but I really feel strongly that we walked away from executing a very positive workshop at the Paso Robles North County Association of Realtors, which followed an email which may or may not be brought up by Tim here tonight, which I can speak to if it is, but it really followed a crowd of realtors and other lending professionals that were quite concerned and maybe ignorant to how PACE worked. And I'm telling you, they walked away happy, they walked away fired up and ready to use PACE. So,
well, we'll hope to hear from some of those folks. I think if that concludes your overview of your program, you are the two folks actually here representing programs that could be approved. And so do we have any questions from council for this young lady? One question, Councilwoman Fonzie.
As a city, we're very familiar with community facilities district, CFDs, and the Y-Green program is similar, I understand it, to a Mello Roos or a CFD. Is there an escalator clause every year that I know CFDs that we deal with often have a cost of living increase that comes every year and is tacked on?
There's no escalator that I'm aware of.
So it's a fixed rate, a fixed rate that's there, and it does not increase.
That's correct, and I'm glad you brought that up.
Thank you.
Other council questions?
Yes,
go ahead,
Mr. Mayor. And again, this question may be for staff because I still don't understand how these properties within our jurisdiction can be placed into a CFD without us having created the CFD. So that's something that might be a question for the city manager, even the city attorney.
Why don't we get that one answered first? Let's see if staff have some input on that. Do we know?
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
The Y-Green program indicates it involves a CFD, and in my experience relative to council and the creation of CFDs, we create the CFD for anything within our community. How can these properties be placed into a CFD in our community that we haven't taken an action to create?
I think I'm going to give that one to the city attorney.
And who would this... And who
or
would the
city manager?
I'm not sure.
Who would the city attorney like to give it to?
I assume that it's through the legal CJPIA. I know these are vetted substantially through the legal process before they were ever set up, but we would have to do more research to answer that question. I'm sorry, Councilmember Borbro.
Okay. Okay, and I know you're going to think this is a repeat question. You indicated that your fees are on the website and whatever. So I saw a for Y-Green, a program fee of $794 to $844, and Dustin could not, identify that certainly from his perspective because they apparently do not charge it. What is the program fee, and And I'm presuming that is in addition to your origination fees, because obviously it would affect the APR, the total APR on your product.
That's correct. So you're asking about the $50 program fee, I believe?
Well, no. What I saw it labeled was $794 to $844. I wouldn't be asking if it was $50.
So I have a screenshot here of actually one of the applications, and I apologize if I'm not answering your question directly, but I believe that's an example of a roll-up of all of the fees, including processing, underwriting fee, recording and disbursement fee, title and escrow fee, which roll up to roughly the same amount. And then there's a 1% fee based on the amount of the project that goes to pay our JPA administrators for each of the contracts that goes under their review before it's approved. Part of the costs that we recover as well, just to go back to what's the ask of the auditor tax collector. So when we do all of the data research and calculations for each of the amount due each year, we don't give them the assessment and the parcel number and say, here you go, figure this out, and then put it on the tax roll. We do that for them through established companies, same with the other providers. So that's part of that job. Somebody has to pay for that. And the customer is able to put that in their financing or not. But those are one of the cost recovery fees so that the program really is turnkey. That's not the city's role, but where does it fall in the county? Well, we're not asking extra workload. We provide the calculations and turn that over to the auditor tax collector. So I believe those are the fees that roll up to that amount.
Okay, and this could have pertained to either of you, but I understand some of the verification that you might do with the customer over the phone about what they heard from the contractor, but how do you, or how is the, you know, our constituents in our community protected from the contractor who's trying to upsell them? You know, I called because my water heater's broken, and the next thing I know, I'm buying a water heater, vinyl windows, and, you know, a fancy heating unit, mm-hmm. all because, you know, there's no cash up front.
So we have internal price controls both in the application tool, so the online proposal tool that the contractor and the customer will walk through. Then our underwriting teams review the same amount with their internal price controls that's software driven. There's reasonableness checks that all of our underwriting and our CSRs, our customer service reps, are very familiar with before they, you know, move the contract to the next phase. And ultimately, and this is true for all the programs, one of the unique oversight components with PACE is the customer signs off that they're satisfied with the work as proposed and as agreed upon in the scope of work. And we don't pay the contractor until that customer signs off. So in addition to all the other oversight, permitted work, which, by the way, we all know in residential upgrades may or may not be permitted by possible licensed or possibly bonded contractors, those are all requirements for PACE contractors. And so there's quite a bit of layers of regulation and checks and balances internally, but I'd say the internal mechanisms that are software-driven and then driven through our training of our staff is really the way that we price control our contractors and scope of work.
Okay, thank you.
Other council questions?
Question about disclosure at sale. How is that, you know, in today's environment, I know that I've done e-signing on my cell phone. You really can't see. You know, I just kind of blew through it, and, you know, because I trust my wife is a loan officer, so she tells me, yes, it's good to go. But, you know, when it comes to me buying a property that has this on there, how am I certain that I'm going to know that the processes that we're going under, that we're undertaking these days with high tech, that people will know what they're getting into when they buy a home, if it has a PACE?
You mean if somebody pulls a preliminary report? So their listing agent, that's kind of one of the basic due diligence things a good agent would do, is they pull the preliminary report and it's right on there. And it's part of what we're doing in going, you know, really wrapping our arms around this other stakeholder group saying, hey, you know, we're willing to provide that report to you. We're willing to set a reminder to train you on pulling a report to look for these assessments, which are still such a fraction of the volume of properties that will ever pass an agent's desk. So, again, we know that if no other city approved another program, there will be more of these assessments that will mature to a phase where they'll either be ripe for sale or refinance. And we want to get ahead of those folks so that there's no more surprises at point of sale with the realtors, which I think that's half the rub of this whole issue, is that they're surprised in point of sale, and mm-hmm. nobody likes to do that as a salesperson, right? You want to be their trusted advisor. Mm-hmm. So we are going out there. We're training folks on how it works. We're getting them psyched on the value of PACE, how it works, the resources to call, And the way in which they can realize the valuation opportunity with these resource-efficient homes.
Thank you.
Well, I can't think of any more open-ended questions that we haven't already asked. So,
can I just add one thank you to
Let's hold off. I don't know that we need any more. Are there any other council questions?
Thank you.
Hang on. Any other council questions? Okay. Last words you'd like to share, and then we're going to open up to the general public, and everyone will have 3 minutes.
Well, I just wanted to say thank you for the life-saving water, and I think this is testament to the lady and all the kudos she received before retiring. I got a lifesaver that'll save me for the rest of the night. Thank you. That's it. And then I think Kevin wanted to say a couple of things, if you may.
Well, let's go ahead, and everyone is we'll open up to the general public. Everyone is welcome to share up to 3 minutes, and if council has questions, they will ask. Go ahead. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Kevin Halber. I am senior loan officer at the Mortgage House, the Green Division, here in San Luis Obispo County. Wanted to tail on your comment about being a UCSB grad. My son is graduating from UCSB, and he comes home and tells me how it is all the time, so the tradition continues, Merrimack.
Yes.
I have been involved in energy efficiency advocacy for a long time back, a good dozen years in my years in Slow Green Build here locally, working with original versions of the PACE program when it was coming back in the early 2000s, and then delays in that, and then coming back to fruition here lately. I participated at the county's request with the education outreach both in San Luis Obispo and in the North County for the outreach to the realtor community, to contractors, to general public around how PACE fits into the general picture of energy efficiency financing and water efficiency financing and how that can be accomplished. And what I can tell you is that there is a whole array of product that can be used. Mortgages at one end being probably the cheapest in the long run, and progressing through various kinds of products, including PACE and Empower loans, and people using their credit cards and so forth to do these kinds of improvements. And every one of them has a place in the array of financing that needs to be available. There are tremendous mandates that are coming down from the state of California that are going to affect every municipality in the way that every property owner is going to have to pay attention to what's going to be required over the course of the next few years around energy and water efficiency retrofits. It's going to be huge, it's going to be expensive, and we need every tool available to us that we possibly can, including the mortgage-type devices that I have available, the incentives that are available through programs like Energy Upgrade California, PACE programs, and Empower programs. Every single one of them is going to be needed to meet the demand. It will be billions of dollars a year, and that's not my projection, that is the state's projection. And I'd be glad to share any of that background data with you. I've got a whole presentation that goes through the history of that, but the demand is going to be huge. So my education efforts and outreach and so forth is in the broad picture, but also tailing very specifically to this device as an adjunct to what else can be done to get people the money that they need. And I'd be glad to entertain any questions that you have.
Thank you. Next speaker.
I timed that well.
Perfect timing. Welcome.
Good evening. I see I have 3 minutes here. It's a lot of presentation to try to grasp. I'm Tim McCutcheon. I represent the North San Luis Obispo County of Realtors, which is the combined associations of the Atascadero Association and Paso Robles, which are now combined as one. And I would like to thank Kevin and the other folks here tonight for coming to the Paso Robles Association office and giving us a presentation. It was enlightening, absolutely. The joy that came out of there maybe was a little bit hyped. We come to you from the consumer protection
area of the Association of Realtors and the California Association of Realtors. This situation has been brought to us many times through the years. Every time we meet three times a year as a state association in the consumer protection section. PACE hero type loans are brought up. We're in the trenches. We see what's happening. Yes, probably what's happening in our North County hasn't hit here, partially because of you guys haven't taken action on it yet. But also, in the other areas, we're seeing what's happened. We're seeing the delays in the process. We're seeing people saddled with something that they didn't realize. The California Association of Realtors, along with the Mortgage Brokers Association, brought forth that assembly bill that brought forth more disclosure. But it quite, my feelings and our feelings was that that's not quite enough. The disclosure needed to have a super lien on your property should be more like when you get a reverse mortgage, that people really need to get it, and the people are getting these things, or a lot of them can't get the loans any other way. So they really need to be handled with kid gloves, and I appreciate the calls and that sort of thing. But when you have a contractor sitting at the table telling you you're going to die if you don't get a new furnace, you're pretty much going to go forward with it. And give you an example here. Here's one in the North County that last year their taxes were $1,151. They got a new heater. This year their taxes are $2,787, and that is a 142% increase in their taxes. For somebody on a fixed income, when they see that tax bill, sounds like a little bit a month, but when they get the tax bill two times a year, that's considerable. I would just like to reiterate one North County nightmare, and this doesn't absolutely come from the lenders. This comes from their representatives, and everybody selling loans, like Kevin, has to be licensed, but when a contractor is out there selling a loan, they signed up one of our directors' family member without their actual knowledge. They signed something thinking they were getting estimates. And I'm going to run over for just a second because these folks have had a lot of time to speak. And please give me a little grace. So she thought she was getting estimate on five properties to have solar installed. Estimate. They came back and sued her for $100,000 because she refused to do it. Now she's in a countersuit with this contractor. That is a local San Luis Obispo County issue. And what we would like to see is let this thing go a little bit longer and let's get all of the wrinkles out of it, not part of the wrinkles. We've got an aging group that are going to be the participants in these loans, and they need care and consumer protection. And
we may ask you some follow-up questions, but I do want to get through any member of the public wants to speak, and we will probably ask you to come back if you would. But don't go far because there may not be anyone else coming. Is there anyone that has not spoken that would like to speak tonight? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close public comment, bring it back to the council. I, for one, if you wouldn't mind coming back, we did start with wanting to hear. You had heard the questions raised before at our last meeting, and we asked for our local realtors to give us some feedback. There was a meeting, and we've heard that, you know, it went well or it didn't go so well. Is there anything else you could share with us that our local realtors and mortgage lenders or folks that you have contact with, any conclusions you've come to from what you've heard you want to offer to us?
Well, the conclusions came from the North County Association of Realtors. The board of directors voted to have us send you a letter and come here and represent. Our position is not in favor of the PACE type loan program. And Kevin paints the picture really well. And we do need to finance these issues, but I think we have to be very careful on how we do it and let the program mature to a point to where we don't have overzealous contractors selling to somebody that may or may not know what they're getting.
Thank you. Any other council questions for this gentleman while he's here? No questions, Charles?
Well, I am curious whether or not you're satisfied that with the changes that FHA did on July 19th last year, that and with the apparent relative ease of subordination, that does that remove one of the, or potentially remove one of the major concerns you had as realtors?
It hasn't removed that with Fannie and Freddie to this point. And also, you'll see the California Association of Realtors, I believe in the email that we sent you, the letter that we sent you, copies their position on it when FHA took that position. Definitely, there's better disclosure. Subordination isn't a positive. There's not in documentation, and it's not written in. So that's a situation that has to be dealt with. And there's different levels. If a person's getting a refinance or going out and getting a second, and we're all talking about good times. Market is going up. 2008, remember the market was when it stopped going up. That's going to happen again. And when people don't have any equity to refinance or to do these things, and they can't get a loan because they can't subordinate to get the next issue in their life taken care of, or they get to the point where they need a reverse mortgage or things like that, all of this has to be taking place. And one of the other things that we hear is exorbitant prepayment penalties. Now, maybe that has been taken care of, but we haven't seen it in the trenches. I've heard all around the state, and it keeps coming. It hasn't stopped. So I would just ask you to please let it mature before you make a decision.
Any other council questions for this gentleman, and then I'll see if you have questions for anyone else. Thank you, Tim. Does council have questions for staff or anyone else, or are we ready to begin our own deliberation?
I'm sorry, I do have a question.
I was just waiting for you. Go right ahead.
I just want to make sure, I don't believe that there are, but in relationship to the, you know, the energy mandates, statewide mandates or statewide goals that are, you know, that have come down the pike and are coming down the pike, and Mr. Hauber was referring to the, you know, this is another means to try to achieve those. Those are not specific goals that pertain to the city, and the city doesn't have any particular requirement to, you know, enact this sort of thing in order to facilitate those. I mean, I'm assuming we don't, but I just want to make sure that there's no...
Let's ask Phil, and then I'm going to give you my answer on that. But Phil, did you have any response to that question? I think, well, how I would word it is we heard there's going to be huge and expensive costs in California. Surprise. I always say, sorry, you live in California. Yeah, there we know that there's going to be a lot of more requirements. How we deal with that is we will probably have to go along with any requirements from the state. It hasn't hit us yet, but we get new building codes every year, and I assume we also have climate action plans. We have many things that we are under jurisdiction of many regional boards, and we will have to cross those bridges. Now, how we do that, any other response you would have to Councilman's question?
There is a lot of layers there. Perhaps repeat that question for me one more time, just so I can narrow that down.
I think the mayor may have put it better, but for example, you know, would this be something that, as they tighten up on us, because as he says, there's a lot of requirements to be in California. Is this the sort of thing that, you know, if we put it in our climate action plan, we'd get 10 brownie points from the state? You know, to ward off some other more onerous requirement, or, you know, or these are just goals and they're not, you know, they really have nothing to do with this program as far as meeting a requirement of the city.
By adopting this program or something similar, are we in any way better, more likely to meet state requirements for our community?
It's possible, and I really couldn't answer that question without looking further into those sorts of options.
Yeah, I felt like this is one of those times where every time you ask a question, you're going to have two more. So that's why I'm kind of pushing to, at some point, we have to make a decision. And, you know, I would like to try to do that tonight, whether we have, there may just not be a final answer for the questions each person has. It's frustrating to me because, you know, I consider myself a CPA. We've got someone who's a finance director. I like having a degree in economics, and I tell you, I get a headache thinking about this stuff. I like those discussions where I can go in and sit down with Seslock, and I say I want to do this, and I kind of understand what we are getting to, and I decide to do something or not. I don't feel I'm there just as a person sitting in a living room trying to understand what my options are. I'm concerned about the subordination. It's not clear to me. I was thinking I was more clear, and I'm less clear than when we started. How does that work? The fact that there's a state fund, you know, that doesn't help me because there's a state fund for roads. I don't know where the money went. There's a state fund for collecting for recyclables. The money doesn't come to us. So a state fund doesn't particularly relieve concerns for me. I think it's certainly a needed program. I think folks are working to make it better. But I think it kind of falls under that, sorry you live in California. I think even trying to do a good thing gets so complicated in California that, you know, I'm not clear. So I'm just going to look to council for your comments on this. At some point, I would like to have a motion or some conclusion to give our community some direction. Where are we at with this? Do we want to go ahead or not? Do we want to ask more questions? Will we at some point get enough answers to our questions to make a decision? I'm going to turn it over to any council member that would like to offer suggestions. Go ahead.
So I agree with your items and won't reiterate. I am concerned about the ability to pay. They say it's coming, but again, it's kind of like gas subordination is there, but it's not, you know, all those questions. There are other financing options, so I'm not concerned that, oh my gosh, people can't get the energy-saving devices they need without a PACE program. And, I mean, quite frankly, the federal government has had a push over decades that everybody should own a home. It didn't matter whether you could afford it or not. And so it seems to me like California is kind of doing the same thing with clean energy, and we've seen how well that worked with housing. So I'm just concerned that they're pricey, that, you know, all of the things that the mayor mentioned, the ability to pay, that just none of it feels really good to me. And I don't think this is a good fit at all. So that's where I stand.
Other council comments?
I also share your concern about the ability to pay is not adequately considered. I have some reservations about contractors selling loans. I can't see that this would work very well. It seems to be a conflict of interest to me. I'm uncomfortable with that very much. I think the consumer protections are not there. There are too many complaints. When there's smoke, there's fire to some extent. I think this may improve and be a good program. I like the community facilities district idea much better than the super lien, which has had multiple problems. But it's the only one that I would even possibly consider. At this point, I'm very uncomfortable with the targeting of lower income people. That I looked through the report and it talked about the CHFA, the CHAFA loans, and the FHA and Fannie Mae generally are for people who don't have a lot of money when they go to buy a home. And when you target them, they don't have the ability to pay. And those that have the ability to pay will go out and get a home equity line of credit, or they will have saved their cash and they'll put it into their solar or their new windows or whatever they put aside for their normal repairs and maintenance. So I think other financing means are available that are better. This interest rate is not competitive with other interest rates that I see every day. And I think we need to wait on this until the product is perfected.
I too am concerned with consumer protection as well, and also like, I agree. A contractor signing a loan, that just struck me as I did not know that was the process. So I understand that they're the ones in the front, and then you guys are in the back, and I understand that. But it just there's not a there's just a I'm concerned for the consumer. I just do not feel this is a good product for our city. So I would choose not to go forward with it.
I really struggled with this because, for one thing, I'd like to point out that if we decline these two providers, you know, for the reasons mentioned, we have a provider in the city, and from what I can see looking at the websites, they are the most expensive provider. And so it would be ironic that we would exclude these two providers in the interest of consumer protection when we already have one in the city that may not, you know, be as good as they are. And also, the libertarian part of me says, you know, people should have options to do engage in financial arrangements. You know, people take out high-interest loans for cars. They do all kinds of different things that aren't necessarily, certainly not the kind of things that I would do, and they may not even be in their best financial interest. And that's conflicting with the other side of me, which, you know, sees this as a potential consumer protection problem. Although, to be in fairness to these providers, I think that problem may lie largely with, you know, the upfront contractors. And one of the sites... I think it was the Hero one, in talking about this program in a Bloomberg Business article, was that they're focusing on, you know, not the guy who calls up and says, I want to put solar on my roof, but the person who's calling up and saying, my water heater went out this morning, or my heater went out and it's January and I'm cold and I want a new one. And that they're seeing this as an opportunity in a positive realm to, you know, let's take that opportunity to engage in energy savings. But in the negative realm, there's a great opportunity to take advantage of the consumer, and that very much concerns me. I don't like the price; it's that they're very pricey, and you know, I do feel that there may be a comeuppance on this thing the next time we have a housing downturn. So I'm really kind of torn with it. But if we vote no, then I think, frankly, we should ask staff to bring back addressing whether we should continue to engage Cal First. Because it would be inconsistent in my mind for us to keep that product and not allow these two to do business in the city.
That has been an issue that has been raised in the past.
Yeah. And I am comfortable with the subordination. I think that part of the process has improved, and it'll just take, you know, a long time for realtors to see that in future transactions. It won't be completely addressed until all the federal agencies that support mortgage financing, you know, come on board. But I'm comfortable they are moving in the right direction in that regard.
Other council comments? I think if we can work towards consensus, what I'm hearing is there's certainly not broad support for going forward with these programs. There's concerns, and there might even be an issue that if that's the conclusion, that we even revisit the program that is already in existence, and we could have a motion to that effect. Also, I would like to have some point is the Board of Realtors has suggested, well, there's may well be some point of revisiting this. I'd like to get some estimate of when that would be. Is that 2 years or something? So those are the things that could be in a motion. It's frustrating to me. I certainly appreciate the folks coming out tonight that I believe are sincere, honest, believe as I do that these are some great potential outcomes to do these things. I just don't, I'm not convinced this is a method to accomplish it. So that's why I'd be hesitant, and I'm even less, you know, understanding of the programs than I was when I started. Question for staff. Go ahead.
If the council chose to bring back the California First program that's currently in place, could that be done at this same meeting, or this would come back separately? How would we move forward on that?
Tonight you would be giving staff direction, so you would go ahead and request that we bring back a resolution to you eliminating the California First program.
Thank you.
So what's the council's pleasure? Motion or action?
I'll make the motion that first we ask staff to bring back the California First to be eliminated, and also to not adopt the PACE program for Atascadero. I don't know if that's sufficient wording.
Let me ask the city attorney, is that a sufficient motion?
That's a sufficient motion.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second.
Any discussion on that motion? I'll call the question. Let me, before I go forward, it is with Phil, and I think probably this may fall on you. Do you need any further direction than that to bring this back for council?
No.
Okay. We have a motion on the floor. I'm going to ask for a roll call.
Council. Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. And thank you all for participating. We'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is council announcements and reports. So let's do council announcements separate, anything that you want to share about involvement you have been in, and then we'll go on to committee reports. So any council member activities to report?
No report.
No.
I think we'll pass on announcements. Any committee reports? I think we're going to pass
yes.
on.
No, actually, I did attend the new member training for the Homeless Services Oversight Council last week, and for a couple hours, so that was interesting. And also, at the last council meeting, the mayor had passed to me an email from Tim Harness, who's running the warming shelter over at St. William's Church. And so I met with him, spoke with him, and went and viewed later that evening the warming shelter in action on a somewhat drizzly night. So I just, you know, learned a few things. And the next HSOC meeting is coming up on March 15th.
Very good. Any other staff reports or comments? Well, then with that, we are adjourned.